Hello, you dirty freak bitches. Welcome to the new world. Welcome to the future. Welcome to the Joe Rogan Experience podcast. This episode is brought to you by Stamps.com. If you go to Stamps.com... Wow, look how long it takes. What a delay. You guys are living in the past.
It's a long time.
You guys are living in the past. People listening? Weird. This shit already happened. If you go... What? Stamps.com is a service that allows you to measure stuff at home with your own scale, and then... Was it?
Yeah. No, that's exactly what it is.
Send shit through the internet, man. You guys are high. Measure. This is rude. Measure. You weigh things. You measure things. You measure the weight. Is that rude to say measure the weight? That's what it is. You measure the weight, you fucks. First of all, how dare you? All of you.
I was thinking it sounded like a joke term.
For some reason, when I'm typing in JRE, it's not sending me to that. How are you getting there?
Joe?
What are you typing in? Like as far as, you type JRE, right?
No, I just do stamps.com.
Stamps.com/Joe. Right.
No.
No? No, that's not it. No, how did you get... It's stamps.com. You enter in the code word JRE, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
If you buy any of the Kitty Cat t-shirts that Brian Redband sells, that's how he makes them. He sends them, rather, through stamps.com. If you, have a small business and you're trying to go to the post office and wait in line and get your shit weighed and... put different labels on boxes, you're going to go crazy. It's not healthy. This way, you do it all on your home computer. Super simple.
They give you a free weight. What scale?
They give you a scale. They give you, it's a $110 value if you enter in the code word JRE. And no risk trial plus $110 bonus offer, including the digital scale and up to $55 of free postage.
Wow!
So they give you a sweet deal, and if you're selling shit, it's a really easy way to deal with things as opposed to like hiring someone to handle it. You can actually handle it yourself. And if you're not selling shit, what do you want to work for somebody forever? Just go make some macrame and sell it. You know, who knows?
Sell purses online. It's the future.
Yeah. Also, you can get cancer from licking stamps.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you want to wet a sponge, you fucks. Don't be licking shit.
You remember when you had to lick stamps?
You freak bitches.
Yeah, I remember that.
1986.
That's a bad time, man. For that humanity. Bad time.
Stamps.com.
Mouths were sticking together.
Code word JRE. We're also brought to you by Hover. Hover is a internet domain name company that is owned by the people that own... Is it hover.com/Joe Rogan? Is that what it is? Hover.com/Rogan. Hover.com/Rogan.
I think it's /Joe.
Let's see.
You got to get all these people to make the same one.
No, it is.
All make the same one.
Yeah.
They can get that together. They can code that in no time.
Because they don't want to pretend that each other exists. They're like, if you're a single guy and you got a bunch of girlfriends, they don't want to know that they have other girlfriends. Nobody wants to think that, why should we change our shit to JRE? You know, just because Squarespace.com uses that. I mean, what the fuck, man? Hover is the domain company that I use, actually. And if you're like a techno idiot like myself, I do not know how to do anything correctly other than really easy, simple, intuitive shit like Facebook or Twitter or something like that. Like, I don't know how to, you know, if I can register a website like super easy and it has things that you normally have to pay for, like who is domain name privacy, which is that's
Ari Shaffir's legs, that's right.
That's key. If you order Ari Shaffir's legs and then, you know, you put that shit online, you don't want people to know. You're just steady beating off to Ari Shaffir's legs. You feel me, people? I mean, they're sexy. Or it could be dickpartyinmymouth.com, which we own.
Go to Ari Shaffir's you legs, own Joe.
Yeah, what we is own dickpartyinmymouth.com. Because we're just trying to make the point. We wanted to make the point that this you could hide this because it would be embarrassing if people knew that you had dickpartyinyourmouth.com.
Right.
Hover.com/Rogan is the sweet spot. If you go there, you will save 10% off your domain name registrations. And like I said, it's the same company that owns Ting, very ethical company, very reasonable rates, and I use them too. So go. They support the podcast, and we support them, and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, Onnit.com, last sponsor, O-N-N-I-T. Use the code name Rogan. Save 10% off any supplements. That's it. Fuck it. Let's not say anything more. I talk too much. Boom. We got Jason Silva. Boom. We got Ari Shaffir. Boom. We got Duncan Trussell. This is the Uber Podcast. It launches now.
Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night. All day.
Praise Odin, Duncan Trussell.
Praise Odin.
Praise Odin, Jason Silva.
Praise Odin.
Praise Odin, Ari Shaffir. We are finally together again. Oh, this is a fucking super podcast.
Yeah.
This is really great.
This is as sexy as it gets for me.
I'm very happy to be here, man. Thank you for having me back.
It was
Thank
so
you.
Cool running into you at the Global Future 2045 conference, man.
I
that
know.
Was badass.
Dude, that was awesome.
That is your world, dude. That's
singularity,
where,
man.
Yeah.
Well, I was actually talking with Duncan about this a little while ago. What was your guys' impression? Because, I mean, that's kind of like the mecca of the singularity. You guys visited Mecca.
Yeah.
Singularity.
And because we visited for the show, we got to talk to some really cool people that probably would never sit down and talk to us.
Yeah.
You know, like Aubrey de Grey. I got to talk to Aubrey de Grey, which we'll have that on the show. And, you know, you guys got to talk to, what was the gentleman's name with the robot?
Hiroshi Ishiguro.
Hiroshi Ishiguro? Is his name? Crazy robot, man.
Yeah.
Really weird.
Did you talk to the one that didn't have limbs?
No.
The one, the little baby one
talks back
to you.
Like somewhat limbs.
Yeah, well, that one freaked me out because that one responds to you in conversation. It understands what you say and it responds to you. So you're like, hey, how you doing? And it goes, good, how are you?
Uh-huh.
And then it's good, man. Where are you from? He's like, I'm from Tokyo. And I'm like, oh, cool. Did you like to travel here? He's like, yeah, it was fun. But here's the thing. It's this like humanoid baby with no limbs, which feels like the beginning of like a creepy sci-fi movie that starts out with showing like the first AI, but it's limbless. So it's this like weird thing. Like, so we're going to build them, but they're going to be like a little circus freaks, you know, without limbs.
It just
felt really honking. What?
Would it be weirder if it was limbless or if it had limbs that couldn't move?
Either
was paralyzed.
These can move. They can hug you with his nubs.
Right, with his nub. But that's why it was freaking
that
because it felt
fucked
it, because
up,
it
man.
Responds to you like a human and it's cute. You immediately anthropomorphize it and you start to respond to it like it's alive. And at some point, it'll be so good at responding that by all measures that we know about when it comes to knowing if you have a subjective experience or if you have a subjective, we'll just believe that they're conscious. And at that point, are they just going to be these living, thinking things that we keep like limbless behind like behind a rope so people can like throw money and look at it. I mean, it was just freaked me out, the presentation of it. I didn't think it was a compelling.
I don't think they're going to – I think one thing that people haven't thought of with robots yet is that they think that they're going to be confined to one form. I think the reality is going to be that they are going to be able to disassemble into individual droplets if they want to. They're going to be these self-assembling things that can kind of –
Like the Terminator, remember?
Yeah.
When it became
liquid,
the new model.
That's what it's going to be. It's going to be like
– But think about that. In a way, it's kind of like time-lapsing reality because what are atoms if not self-assembling entities that link up
together.
With other atoms and become cells? And then those cells like self-assemble into tissues and organisms. I mean, the whole story of the universe, the whole – The opposite of entropy is extropy, right? The things that move towards greater complexity and self-assemble. So when people talk about robots or nanotechnology, it's like an acceleration of it so that it becomes discernible to us from this scale.
And this is funny because it's
that already exists.
When McKenna talks about his DMT experience, he calls them self-transforming machine elves. So it's almost as though he's come in contact with a future version of what these androids are going to be.
Well, just stop if you think if you accelerated life. I mean, time is all, it's all our perspective. Because if you accelerated our life, human life, the experience of humanity, but accelerated at times in a billion, and you got to see the first single cell become multicellular and on and on and on, cities rise, and people fly, and then the earth crash again. You would get to see it all in like some sort of a psychedelic trip that only takes 3 minutes.
Right.
And you would see the earth form out of the cosmos.
Yeah.
I mean, you could that's psychedelic. I mean, that might as well be a mushroom trip.
100%. I mean, if you
Absolutely.
Could like literally
it's just a perspective
time-lapse.
Thing. It's a time
it's
thing.
It's all perspective. Like even when you see time lapse of trees growing, I mean, it's like you see the tree and it aims towards the sun.
Yeah.
The plants like aim towards
the
sun. The flowers blossom. I mean, it's kind of crazy. It's almost like agency itself, which is that what they call the, you know, the life force, that there's agency. Even plants seem to have it through time lapse. Like you see agency, intent. Like, it wants to go towards something. Oh, right. What That's does that cool. say? Kevin Kelly, okay, the trippy co-founder of Wired, in his book What Technology Wants, he calls technology the technium. He says it's the seventh kingdom of life, and that it also has wants and needs. And he says that if we were able to zoom out and remove ourselves from the being the co-participants in creating technology, it would actually look like the technology itself is self-assembling and has a direction, like the time-lapsing of plants, which is crazy.
Right.
Yeah. And then when McKenna was tripping out and he starts talking about singularities, hello, hear the echo with Kurzweil and McKenna.
Sure.
So McKenna's tripping on DMT and talking about singularities. He's talking about universes that engender novelty, universes that allow the sprouting of new possibility. It's the same thing that Kevin Kelly's writing about in his technology book.
Right.
So you see, like, the respected technologists writing these books about what's happening. You know, even Eric Schmidt, The Age of Augmented Humanity, and Google. Google represents the literalization of the psychedelic dream, you know, the literalization of the idea that we are expanding our minds with these technologies, whether they be chemical technologies or whether they be these external technologies.
And what you're saying, this is why it's hilarious when you hear people start railing against, it's unnatural.
Completely.
We shouldn't do it.
Yeah,
because what you're saying is like, no, actually, there appears to be some form of transcendent, invisible architecture that all things grow upon in a similar way, whether
100%.
It's plants, technology, humans. It just stretches on this invisible framework and reveals
100%.
What's hidden and underneath all things, which seems to be this ever-perfecting, ever-complexifying, harmonious expression.
That's right. And Pierre de Chardin, who was a famous Jesuit priest, called it the Omega Point. He called it the Omega Point. He got pushed out of the church because he basically sort of divinized the idea of the singularity, and he was using the language of God, but he was talking about this move towards complexity and the phenomenon of man, and man was the point in which evolution became self-aware and started directing its own evolution. Doesn't that echo what we were talking about at the Futures Conference? So
absolutely.
You see these echoes, you see these patterns that connect, you know, the whole idea of cyberdelics, right? So cybernetics and computers, and then psychedelics and, you know, chemical technologies, and they collide in what's known as cyberdelic. That all started in the 60s and 70s in Silicon Valley, when the computer scientists were tripping on LSD and working on creative problems. Yeah. Xerox PARC, augmenting human intelligence. There's a book by John Markoff called What the Dormouse Says, which talks about that, where that came from. I mean, you have to think that these people were out of their minds when they were conceiving of a world in which these computers could be wirelessly sending our thoughts across time and space at the speed of light, and that we're all going to be connected and see our faces on these, like, machines. Like, I mean, you have to be, in a way, psychologically or metaphorically tripping to even think so far outside the box. So,
that's why, like, Da Vinci was so fascinating.
A
lot of the stuff that he came up with, it really didn't come to fruition in that form. But you could see that he was, like, thinking of these concepts, like, way ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
He was just really, like, what a fascinating, fascinating guy that must have been.
Oh, completely.
And envisioning the future, knowing that he's just stuck with these fucking apes.
Do you think
apes.
He could have any regular conversation with anybody?
I doubt it.
Do you think he could walk along and pretend that he cared about what happened at the Coliseum last night?
Did you hear about the potatoes or tainted? The potatoes are no good. We're going to riot.
We can fly.
Well, he's drawing a fucking helicopter in his backyard.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
That's so far ahead of the curve. But it stands to reason. If some people are born with bigger dicks and other people have larger ears.
Yeah.
Some people just have a part of the brain or the ability to tune into creativity.
Who was Da Vinci's teacher?
Well, it sounds like, I mean, was he a wealthy guy? Like, did he come from a background where he had time for leisure?
I did not know any of the history of Da Vinci.
He must have. He didn't make any money at these things.
Well, here's the thing. So? I was reading an article today that said, you know, even though human beings evolved about 200,000 years ago, the first signs of, like, religion or, you know, contemplative thinking didn't appear until the cave paintings that are like 70,000 years old. So if we've had the same brains for 200,000 years, but you didn't see the beginning of humanness or imagination until about 70,000 years ago, why did it take so long if we've had the same brains?
Well,
and the idea
also
is that it's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Those first 100,000 years, we didn't even have enough food. We didn't have, like, any kind of organized society. It was only when we could afford the leisure time that all this other stuff
started. It's like paying back a loan. You mostly pay interest at first and then 1 cent on the
Jew logic.
Well, that's what it is. And then eventually you're paying like only 2 cents of interest.
Singularity.
And the rest of stuff. Yeah, so you get it all. Mm-hmm. So like they took 99% of their time just dealing with staying alive.
Yeah,
1% to get to wherever they were going.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And it's like as a collective human society, at some point we had enough hunters and we had enough organization maybe that we could feed ourselves, and there was the beginning of free time.
Yeah.
The beginning of eating psychedelic chemicals and making cave paintings and shamanic dances and all that.
Free time. Whoever invented free time is my God.
Think about countries today, civilizations today that are living like that. Have you heard about these people in India?
Oh.
There's an island, an uncontacted island off of India. And recently, these within the last few years, these fishermen inadvertently got drunk on their boat and drifted into the shore, and these people killed them. They killed them, and then the authorities were trying to figure out how to get to the bodies without getting shot at by these people and having to kill them, because there's not that many left. There's maybe like 40 or 50. And they have no contact with other human beings.
Wow.
They are barbarians.
Wow.
They're total 100% complete savages that are living off the land, fishing with homemade nets
made
with twine.
How do you put them under – just like – They're controlling themselves. Who are you to like put them under your thumb?
Yeah, well, it's not only that. They won't even go in there to retaliate against murder, which is fascinating to me. It's like the anthropologists are so concerned with keeping this intact and studying the civilization in some sort of a way to try to – I mean, this
really,
is not
that
attacked.
Many
They're
left. Almost like their own country, and they were attacked.
Well, no.
Some foreign person came
washed aboard, and they just killed the guy. They didn't even talk to him first. You know, I mean, he might have been a respected member of the community within 6 months. You know, they didn't even give him a chance.
Hello, can you help me out? My rudder seems broken.
And there's tales of cannibalism. But it's hard to substantiate, but it's not outside the realm of possibility. So you might be dealing with cannibals that we allow to kill people because they're so primitive that we don't want to fuck up what they've got. Because there's only like 40 of them.
Why do we want to preserve that?
Isn't that interesting? Because there is a sentimental instinct in humanity that wants to preserve
everything.
Everything.
A hamburger place goes under a blood prize.
Yeah. It's like an instinct that people want to do that. And a lot of people say that's like, you know, that's part of our humanity is keeping intact cultures and religions and intact all these ideas because they you can see that with this thing that's emerging is so far is so much bigger than some old desert religion. And the bigger it gets and the more this thing emerges, the more its light begins to shine so brightly that all these silly little superstitious ideas begin to seem increasingly ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, our consciousness is becoming so expanded that it's almost like, you know, we're able to, like, all of a sudden turn around and see ourselves. And I know that sounds almost like it's an impossible shape, but, like, the first time that we can actually do that and we can see ourselves sort of out of context, just like in 1969 when astronauts first took a picture of the Earth from the vantage point of space. I mean, that's literally like the human mind was folding in on itself because how is it possible for a human brain that emerged from the Earth to then see the Earth not from the Earth?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like
those...
the Earth looking at itself. Like that's what was happening because we are like a seed of the planet and then we left the planet and turned around and took a picture.
How about the mind fucks of the shots from the Voyager from orbit?
Oh, yeah.
Where you see Earth as like a
pale blue dot.
Little dot.
Have you seen Sagan's film?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. They sent something out there and it's still taking pictures of us. And it's so fucking far away that we're like a little tiny dot. And then you get a sense of what this thing really is.
Yeah. We're nothing compared to all of it.
It's insanity. Yeah. It's insanity. It doesn't even
How do you reconcile yourself, though, to that? Like, think about the average person. How do you accommodate to yourself to the idea that everything you know, the vast expanse, the repository of experience of your entire life is a blink of a blink of a blink on a grain of a grain of a grain of a grain. Like,
well, instead of turning it that way, I mean,
you have
listen, that's it. It's like you don't matter at all. Why not just enjoy yourself?
Well, you do matter, though. That's not true
but
either.
But you want it to mean
it's
something.
Not,
you need
not
a narrative.
That, it does.
Yeah,
it
I
want to
fly.
No, it does. It does mean something. It means something to you right now. It's tangible. It's real. It means something to the people that you're in contact with. There's nothing unreal or unnatural about it because it's temporary.
But do you have attachments or you don't have attachments?
Well, you do. It's natural. But there's this connection that you have to this greater gigantic thing doesn't negate the small moments in your life.
Right.
It doesn't negate video games
saying.
That you enjoy. It doesn't negate finding like the perfect porn to jerk off to.
Right.
It doesn't negate
That's
a sandwich
that
you enjoy.
Fun.
Yes.
Just give yourself happiness until you're gone and
but
no
it
one
does,
will remember
it,
you.
But I don't agree that it doesn't matter because it does matter. It matters to you right now.
Yeah.
And although that seems ridiculous, so does life itself. So does every breath you take. Well, hold your breath, stupid.
Yeah.
You don't think the breathing's important? Hold your breath. Of course it's important.
Yeah.
Don't be silly.
Yeah.
You're like this. The existential ideas can overwhelm the reality of the situation. And the reality of the situation is you would like to stay alive, and for the most part, it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's not fun, you've managed your life incorrectly.
But you know what's interesting about what you just said is that, you know, you've eloquently stated something that's actually very difficult for most people to experience. Most people either have to have, like, they have to be half asleep, which means ignore the overwhelming universe and just be barely present. And then other people are awake to this overwhelming universe.
You know, Brian's right here, and he
panic.
Can hear you.
Hey.
You know, you're talking about him like he's not here.
That's rude. he's jabbing at Red Band.
No, we're not. We're just bringing him into the conversation.
No, but it's like, you know, Albert Camus, the existentialist, said life should be lived Stranger. To the point of tears, right? And yeah. He'd say, everything has been figured out except how to live. And this is the question.
I heard that was due was into onions and hot sauce. He was just a freak like that.
Oh, yeah?
Camus?
Yeah, it was a big misunderstanding.
You know how
onions and hot sauce aficionado, and everybody was like, oh, he's just like really deep.
Yeah. You know how he you know how he died?
Oh.
He had a train ticket that he was going to take a train to get to his destination. His friends were like, no, let us drive you.
And they got in an accident?
Yeah. It was like a terrible decision. But go on with your Camus quote, because I love
it.
Yeah,
well,
my mother died
but
yesterday.
I think that,
might have been the day before. I can't remember.
It's like,
what's that, Ari?
My mother died yesterday, or it might have been the day before. I can't remember.
Camus quote.
Oh, yeah.
It's the opening line of The Stranger.
Yeah.
Just disconnected.
Completely.
Completely. Like,
I remember reading it, and I found it really depressing. Well, I guess my whole question is, okay, so in the face of an infinite universe, with our minds we can ponder something close to the infinite, yet the irony is that we're housed in these heart-pumping, breath-gasping, decaying bodies. You know, Ernest Becker, who wrote The Denial of Death, says we are gods with anuses. Think of how brilliant that is. So the idea that we are these transcendent beings, but every single day we are reminded that we have metabolism,
it's funny
entropy.
That Becker thinks that God doesn't have an anus.
Yeah,
how does he
asshole.
Know?
What an asshole. Funny. He's so presumptuous.
But still, how do you reconsider? Yeah, it's the only species that can really like lose sleep over the fact that we are mortal beings. You know,
mm-hmm.
we can barely sustain the here and now because we know that one day we might be dead. And so, what do? Do we just lose ourselves in diversions, and sex, and drugs?
Well, here's my problem with this whole line of thinking.
We know we're going to be dead.
Here's my problem with this whole line of thinking.
Yeah.
What does the average person do? What does the average person do?
Work.
How about turn the question inward and say, "What do you do?" And tell everybody what you do because. That's how we figure it out, through you telling me how you're managing it. I tell you. But when you start going, what does the average person do? Well, the reality is we're all the average person.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're all the average person.
Yeah.
The average person varies
in
radically.
Our insignificance especially.
Yes, absolutely. In our significance, we are all the
Might
average
stand
person.
Out today.
100%. Yeah, when someone says that all men are created equal, not really, but yes.
Yeah.
Not really in this not experience, really. But yes. You know, there's Einsteins, there's Stephen Hawking's, there's fucking Lou Ferrigno's. There's a lot of weird people in this world.
But I think there's a responsibility as technology emerges and science begins to show us the truth of reality. These responsibilities begin to emerge that create ethical dilemmas for societies, which is when you have large swaths of the human population being controlled by tyrannical, fundamentalist, religious people who are basing everything they do on a phantasmal being that clearly doesn't exist and outdated rituals that are just rotting.
They made Galileo apologize.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. What do you do? Because in those situations, at some point, it's like, well, you do have a right. You obviously, there's freedom of religion. You want to give people freedom of religion, but simultaneously, it's like, well, but why are you cutting girls' clitorises off? You know what
agree.
I mean?
Well,
like,
dude, it's almost like you know, we need an upgrade. You know, like religion was a technology that at least informed people with the illusion of meaning, so that they could, you know. As they say, you can live for a week without food, 3 days without water, but not a minute without hope. You know, like so that gave us hope. And then Ernest Becker says that was the first solution.
I could hang on for a minute.
Yeah, that was the first
solution.
Whoever
said that never ate a pop brownie because there's fucking hours with no hope.
Yeah.
And you get through it. You get through that shit.
We'll
get through
with
it. And you learn.
Oh, that's
you
well
learn
put.
When you hit the other side.
You learn when you hit the other side. Well, that's interesting. Well, we talked about ayahuasca and DMT, which, you know, as Eric Davis says, baseline reality dissolves. There is a complete ego death and a new reality emerges.
Yes.
Or it just fucks with your visual cortex and you add it all with your ego and your psyche and your creativity. And you have the ability to generate images inside the mind's eye with your creativity. And you just create a fucking world of geometric patterns because that's how your eyeball works when it's over flooded with too much DMT. That's how your visual cortex responds.
That's what happens.
When there's 10 times the normal dose in. Maybe that too.
Just like when you have a cut, it clots.
Yeah, but
it's
you know
how it responds to that.
This is what I always say when people say, "How do you know whether or not a DMT trip is real?" Like, what you know, like you're pretending like that really happened. You really did speak with intelligent beings from the planet.
Yeah.
The reality is whether or not you really did go to another dimension and speak with these super intelligent beings who are made out of love, or whether it didn't happen at all. Either way, you experience the same thing.
Right. Right.
Sure.
You get to hear the message.
You get to see the exact same thing as if it was real.
Yes.
Like, literally.
Well, you know where that was explored brilliantly? Do you guys remember the movie Contact?
Yes.
Based on the Carl Sagan book? So she is a secular scientist. Yeah. She doesn't want to hang out with, like, you know, Matthew McConaughey, who's a priest. She doesn't believe in God. In fact, at first, they try not to let her go.
But that's how brilliant the Matthew McConaughey cock. Because even though she didn't want any of that, he still fucked her.
Yeah, he did.
Son.
That's right.
She risked pregnancy. What happened at the end of the movie? She went through the wormhole and went to this, saw these alien civilizations, had an experience that sounded like a religious experience, except it was, you know, a
she didn't go anywhere though. Right?
Well, from the perspective of Earth, through the wormhole, it just looked like the ship just ran right through.
Right.
So nobody believed her, but she had the experience. So all of a sudden, she was sounding like the religious people or like the people that were tripping that said they saw the elves.
Right.
And all of a sudden, she, as the scientist, was had to cast doubt on her own experience because she.
Yeah, but like,
saw the evidence
like when you try DMT, you know already what that is. It doesn't just hit you. You're like, what the fuck? And your mind just explodes. You know you're taking something, so you can make reason of it. I could totally see, like, well, what was it? That must be God. And let me tell other people about this.
Well, you know,
I could totally see that as a way to start.
There's scholars in Jerusalem, legitimate scholars now, that believe that that's what Moses saw when he saw the burning bush.
What?
That he saw the acacia tree. The acacia tree, which is rich in DMT, and it's really common to that area.
Oh,
that
really?
Makes a lot
the
of
idea
sense.
Is that this bush, or the extraction of this bush, was burning, and that's how he had this religious experience.
Yeah.
He saw God.
It's real dry
he had
there.
A DMT trip. And this is like, this
that
is not.
They caught a puff of this tree, like, on fire?
That's one of the theories.
Wow, I can
but
see that.
That's just a theory. But the primary focus is of achieving this theory is that Moses most likely had a psychedelic experience.
Yeah.
Because we know that these substances are not new.
And plus, he said he got the tablets that God gave him, but he smashed them before he got on the hill. he was mad because they made the golden cow. He smashed them. Nobody ever saw the fucking tablets.
Yeah, he was tripping. Yeah.
And that researcher does a lot of mushrooms.
You know?
Yeah.
He could have been like, yeah, so, well, I don't know, I smashed him.
They destroy the evidence.
Or
destroy the non-evidence.
Well, but everybody talking about it's high.
But that's very similar to when Terrence McKenna talks about the stoned ape hypothesis, obviously. But there's a guy called Rich Doyle. He wrote a book called Darwin's Pharmacy, and it's about sex, plants, and the evolution of the noosphere. And he talks about psychedelic substances as information technologies that manipulate our ability to capture and manage attention. So they create what he calls infinite resonance with set and setting.
Say that again.
Infinite resonance with set and setting. That's why when people talk about like psychedelic experiences, they're like, make sure you're in a good headspace, make sure you're in a set and setting. Because if you have infinite resonance with set and setting,
what's resonance?
Resonance, like you become completely porous to whatever is around you.
This motherfucker's talking mumbo jumbo.
No, I'm hearing it, but I want to get all the way.
You no longer have the ability. It's like turning up the volume on existence.
Okay.
Turning up the volume so loud that if you're in a magnificent place looking at a tree, you might think you're looking at God. If you're in an uncomfortable situation, you're going to go down to the pits
of hell.
It
means, you know that thing when a microphone gets too loud and you get feedback?
Yes.
If you're in a shitty place tripping, you can get a feedback.
Infinite feedback just keeps going.
Or you could be in a beautiful place that, you know, it elicits feelings of calm and sereneness, and then you can feel like you're
like infinite
being
orgasm.
Licked by God.
Yeah. Happy Shroom Fest,
that's
by the way,
be
everybody.
The real, Happy Shroom Fest. That's going to be the real problem when people are able to decide what state of consciousness they experience at that moment, not even earn it by being so scared that you take mushrooms. Because every time I've taken mushrooms, I've been scared.
You should be. You're about to go through some change.
Yeah.
It should
I get
scare
scared
you.
When I eat a pot
You'll
cookie.
Lose control.
When I eat the last crumb of a pot cookie, I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah. You got to deal with
you this. You have that moment.
I start tapping my feet going,
lose control. How
bad
is this
going
to get?
What did I do?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Is that why? Is that because it's like if you think of the metaphor of skydiving, it's the moment where you've already jumped and you're just I don't know what it's going to be like?
I honestly think that there's an accelerating process of self-development that we all go through.
Yep.
And that if we are not improving as a human being, we feel shitty.
Yeah.
We don't feel good. I don't feel good unless I'm getting my shit together. That's just a fact. I try to be a better person today than I was yesterday for real. And it sounds stupid, but it's because everybody says it, and very few people like legitimately totally practice it. They fall in and out. But I feel like that's also one of the reasons why people aren't that happy. I feel like if you're not like improving yourself and getting rid of your bullshit in life, it's very difficult to feel good. It's very difficult to be enjoying it if you have all these issues that you're not dealing with.
Right.
Like about you as a person, or you with your job, or you know.
I hear more and more people talking about it when they say like, and I know I've been bad at that, and I'm actually trying to make a note to not be like that anymore.
Well, it might be telling the truth. I mean, it's not a process where, you know, you either get it right or you don't get it right.
Yeah.
Like some people fall back and forth. I mean, how many people do we know that used to drink and then drank again and then stopped drinking for a long time? And then, you know, it's like a little battle sometimes with people to try to improve their shit.
Ram Dass compares it to floating in the ocean and your head's bobbing up and down. Sometimes you see the shore and sometimes you don't. That's what it's like. It's like sometimes you're there and you see it, sometimes, but you can't beat yourself up when you go down. You have to have faith that you'll come back up. But what you're saying is dead on, man, because if I'm feeling like shit, it's not some broad, big thing you've got to do. If I'm feeling like shit, 9 times out of 10, it's just because I've got dishes in the sink, or I didn't go jogging, or I didn't like sweep my kitchen. It's
But that would be like an example of set and setting right there. Right. You know, other people say that, you know, 99% of your problems will go away if you get a good night's sleep. Like in terms of
a lot of them
emotionally
do.
Of like, yeah,
I mean, because sometimes even when you're sleeping, you're thinking about things and you put them into perspective.
Yeah,
I mean, how many times you've been really upset when you go to bed, and by the time the night is over, you're like, eh. Whatever.
Oh, right. You let it go. Sleep on it.
Well, it has to do with like regulating your emotions.
A gig you lost or something. Yeah. Something that happened. Like, I'm sure.
So you don't try to go to bed before you make the phone call to
whoever. Talk to you about this, because you've had a few instances where, like, the Amazing Racist stuff, like, lost you gigs.
Yeah, I just had to get a thing canceled in London, Ontario.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, that's got to be frustrating as fuck.
So frustrating.
Like, how do you let go of that? Like, when you're dealing with something like that, hey, how do you let go of that?
Well, sometimes you say... I stop myself. I go, stop, hold on. Can griping about this change it in any way? No. All right, move on.
So it's like a little moment of dialogue with yourself and a decision.
Yeah, if I'm in a long line at the airport and I'm going to miss my flight, and I'm like, oh, come on. I keep looking up ahead. I'm like, are you going to go to the front and ask, say I'm about to miss my flight, or are you not? If you're not, then stop griping. Yeah. Then just let it wash over you.
Interesting. I have a friend who's starting a company. He wants to create a watch that regulates emotion, because people talk about like creating. We talk about the age of the quantified self, where we're going to have all these devices that are going to be
a watch that what emotions
that measures emotion.
Oh, yeah, really?
Then you have everybody know angry? If you're annoyed.
Well, it's not going to tell other people. It'll tell you. So
you get to set the code.
It'll measure your biofeedback rhythms, and it'll give you feedback to tell you how you're feeling, so that then you can change your behavior if that's what needs to be done. Feedback loop seems to be the best way to reprogram reflex responses. Like, they're saying that the best way to stop people from doing speeding is not from like actually pulling them over, but it's from those sensors that say your speed tell you
that's
that
cool,
as you
man.
Pass them by.
Yeah.
So receiving feedback is the best way to change behavior.
Yeah.
So in terms of like it moving towards experience design and the age of the quantified self, is if you know you're eating something unhealthy, maybe you won't eat it. If you're constantly reminded about how you're feeling
man.
And what you're doing, you can really kind of improve yourself. And it goes back to the whole thing of like
technologically enhanced mindfulness is what that is. Because it's like
brilliantly put.
How often are you wandering around in a state of absolute terror pretending everything's fine?
Yeah.
I'm totally fine. Yeah. Having a great day. Yeah. But inside you're like, oh, fuck, man. If I don't make enough money, I'm not going to make rent.
Yeah.
But you're pretending to be happy. So if you have a watch that's a bolt that's flashing, it's like you are terrified.
You are tense right now. Talk about it. Deal with it.
One of the most important things that anybody could ever understand in this life is what happens and what it feels like when you're out of debt. You know, because how many of us, by the time we're 20, whatever the fuck we are, we have so much money that we can't pay off. Credit cards, student loans.
I just last week paid off my college loans.
Oh,
congratulations.
I'm 39.
Isn't that crazy? What a crazy society we have that, like, everybody by the time they're 30 years old is in some kind of debt.
Slavery.
Unless you're super rich.
Slavery.
A lot of education debt, right?
A lot of education
but
debt.
But that's going to change.
Debt.
That's going to change with
medical
technology.
School debt is insane.
Not medical school, medical debt.
That too.
Those are two systems that definitely need an upgrade. I mean,
that's
the thing. And this is what we can actually connect that to the ideas that Rick Kurzweil is talking about. He's saying that healthcare is about to undergo the same transformation that information technology went through. So that means that the whole idea of how people, you know, cure themselves or fix diseases, this is all going to become like something that's a part of our smartphone and part of our day-to-day life. So it's going to change that broken system of healthcare. And education through the internet, free education, people around the world coming online, joining the global conversation, getting free education.
There's a Harvard professor who's just offering all his classes online.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like, go ahead, take it.
Yeah, it's only the beginning of that. And you have the power of decentralized peer networks that can be leveraged to solve all these problems. You know,
What does that mean, decentralized peer networks?
It's the same thing that we talk about self-organization and emergence when like cells link up together and become organisms. So
like
you have electronic self-organization happening like with social media, like when when there's leaderless protests that just spontaneously self-organize.
Sure.
And these technologies allow these decentralized peer networks that don't have leaders and don't have a head
anonymous.
That you can cut off. Potentially something like that. But so Stephen Johnson's book Future Perfect talks about how those can be leveraged to like solve problems, you know, like cure diseases, like leverage the
decentralized peer Yeah, peer networks can be used. Peer networks,
by the way, I love that term because I think one of the big fucking problems is the need that people have to claim responsibility for innovation. And this is one of the horrors of our age, is that thing which makes people get rich is what motivates people. People aren't motivated. Like, when people are trying to cure cancer, you like to believe that the reason they're trying to cure cancer is out of some kind of altruistic desire, until you see them going to the Supreme Court to try to patent genes because they want to profit off of their research.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird, right? It seems like the idea should be the dreamy.
I know, but that's why Pfizer is giving the researchers the money to research, is so that eventually they'll be able to show return on that investment.
Right. It's just a strange.
Yeah, it is strange.
It's
right.
very strange.
Wait, and you know what the real problem with all of it is? That it's not psychedelic. That's the real problem, is that you can make money and create things, but you have to have a psychedelic mindset in order for society to move forward, like, emotionally.
That's right. They put it all behind.
And friendship-wise, like, if it's not doing that, then it's going to get caught up in the ones and zeros, collecting the numbers. It can be prosperous and still be ethical. It's just, it's not. And the reason why it's not is because when you have a corporation, like, you get that diffusion of responsibility thing going on, which is the opposite of what's psychedelic.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly, man.
It's where the individual has no responsibility for the mass of individuals, whereas the psychedelic experience
is connected to
the
all
mass
individuals.
Of individuals is connected entirely.
Yes.
That's well put.
I'm going to Joshua Tree on Sunday.
Dude, tell me what you're going to do there, son.
Let me guess. I think you're probably going to do your taxes.
No, I'm not going to do my taxes. I'm going to do mushrooms under the supermoon.
Get your freak on.
Is there a supermoon on Sunday?
Sunday night, middle of Shroom Fest.
Let me tell you something, son. When you do mushrooms, it's always supermoon. There's no non-supermoon. When you do mushrooms and you realize that there is a fucking planet one quarter of the size of ours, and it's literally floating above our heads.
Yeah, it's
are you doing
holding
tent?
It.
Floating.
What?
Are you doing tent? Hotel room?
No, tent out in Joshua. Yeah, I've never been there, too. It should be cool.
Duncan, what are you getting, buddy?
Getting beer for you and me.
Yeah, all right.
That's what I'm talking about.
I'll have one.
Beer?
Try one of these Black Butte Porters. They're delish.
Yeah.
Delicious.
I tried drinking with a 23-year-old recently. Those people are straight out of college. They're in training.
Damn.
Yeah, they bring shots around like it's nothing, and I'm barfing in the street, and they're still going.
They don't give a fuck.
God, I can't.
Yeah, your liver's old, son.
Yeah.
It's almost over for you.
Have you ever had Eric Davis on the show?
Eric Davis is...
He wrote a book called Technosis that I think you guys would love.
Yeah?
He kind of writes about the mystical undertones of technology. So, again, like the whole psychedelic cybernetics thing. And I just... I don't know. I wondered if you guys ever had him because he...
No, I never heard of him.
You guys
now I know.
Check out this book. Yeah, it's
boom. Cool. Sounds good. Eric Sounds Davis. Like perfect stuff. Right up my alley.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many people like that now. Thank you, sir. That's the beautiful thing about this time. It's like, you know, every day there's some new guy who's got a new video or a new song or a new fuck. There's so many fucking pieces of something that are being created, whether it's jokes. There's more comedians now than ever.
Just really access to all of it.
Yeah. But there's also an infinite amount of content. How do you decide what to pay attention to? That's one
of the really hard. Well, that's
you
one
get
of the things.
Anxiety?
Well, that's the beauty of something like a Death Squad. Where, like, you know, which was the stupid nickname that we all call ourselves. Like, you know that if Ari tells you someone's funny, he's not going to be lying about it.
Right.
You know?
So if Duncan tells you. Tell you guys, people that aren't funny, that you know.
Yeah.
No, but that's good.
If
you guys
Ari
are...
tells me to watch some guy, I know he's really funny. So the audience knows that, too. And that's sort of like the beauty of having like a bunch of people that have a like-minded.
Yeah.
You tune in. Uh-huh. And we're all different. Like, there's a lot of alt people that would hate our humor, right? And the last thing they want to do is be hanging around with us. And they're not wrong.
Yeah, they're just not into it. It's not that style.
They have a different thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But you find your thing, whatever it is, you know, whether it's Johnny Cash or Taylor Swift, you fucking follow it. And then, you know, whatever's connected
to her.
The
best of that.
Yeah, I mean.
Those people are going to find it for you.
Yeah, I think that's how you do it in today's day and age. It's like, and that's the beauty of us being able to introduce people like Bert Kreischer or, you know, anybody else that we brought onto our podcast. That all of a sudden other people can go, oh, that guy's really funny. Like, oh, and he's friends with this guy. Oh, that guy's really funny, too. And then
Jason
just,
Silva.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
Like, how many people discovered you?
Well,
this sort of stuff.
This was one of the biggest things I ever did. Come on 17. Your podcast, dude.
That's amazing.
It's been a year later, and I still get people saying like to come back and hang out with you guys and have a man job, which has been amazing.
Well, it's a two-way street, though, because the whole reason why the podcast is interesting is because people like you are interested in coming on. You know, it's
all right.
if you only had just me talking after a while, I'd be repeating stories like a motherfucker. I'd just be spouting nonsense at this point.
But you know what's interesting about what you're saying? You know, there's a book that talks about the importance of an information diet, you know, because we live in a world now where there is like an infinite amount of content out there, more than 10,000 hours of video uploaded to YouTube every hour, some crazy number like that. And so the most difficult thing, I think, becomes deciding who are going to be your information diet filters. Like in this case, the Death Squad, the peer networks that you are connected to, the people you follow
Powerful
on
Brian
Twitter.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people trust NBC.
By the way, when is the
Brian Redband, when is the you realize how limited it is.
Well, once you realize
Brian
what you're missing,
leaving us, everybody. So he's got to go do an Ice House show. When is the new shirt coming out?
Pre-order should be up next week, so next 2 weeks or so.
It's my favorite of all time. It's Head and Shoulders. It's awesome. And the other one is awesome, too. But this new one is on another level. It's dope. I want it. I want a pair of underwear.
I want it.
I want a pair of underwear with that on.
Jesus Christ.
I don't give a fuck, dude. I wear cloth off over my dick.
Oh, nice. Not on the podcast, Joe.
I'll let you smell them.
Yeah.
Jason, what kind of car do you drive, dude?
Oh, that was the
podcast. Don't have a car anymore.
You one
I'm
of those motherfuckers.
I'm in New York.
Jesus,
I used to have one here.
A car in New York?
You don't drive cars?
I mean, when I lived here, I had a car.
I wanted to ask you about that Tesla.
Oh, I don't
figure,
have it. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Is that the coolest thing of all time?
It's kind of incredible. And they're only going to get better. I think they're about to release, like, the, what, third or fourth generation now?
I don't know.
Martine Rothblatt had one. And when I interviewed her and I got to meet her robot, Bina 48.
Yeah.
You ever seen that?
No.
Her spouse is a robot.
Really?
Martine Rothblatt, fascinating story. Was a man, founded Sirius Satellite Radio, got a sex change, became a woman, and then created a robot.
Yeah.
That is a direct copy, a duplicate of her spouse. Creepy how good
Where's
it looks.
Where's the spouse?
Well, there. She's there, too.
Okay.
She's there as well. I mean, she just loves her, so she made a robot for her.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's like Liberace making that guy change his face to him.
Whoa.
Did
he really do that?
Yeah, he got plastic surgery to look more like Liberace.
That's hilarious. Is that in that the HBO thing?
Yeah.
I always wondered why Matt Damon and Michael Douglas were willing to do that. And like they have pictures of those two blowing each other. That's the only thing that makes sense. Or they agreed to do a little. Like if they came up to you and you were Matt Damon and they said, hey, listen, man, I know those Bourne Identity movies, they were really big and everything. Blah, 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 blah. Listen, you're going to play Liberace's butt buddy.
And best of all, made for TV.
Yeah, made for TV.
It's on HBO.
Liberace's longtime lover.
Oh, I see. Not in the movie.
Butt Buddy's very offensive, by the way, to my gay friends, and I apologize for
that. Butt Buddy.
It's Butt Pirate.
You guys are so immature.
It's not. I mean, if you said that a girl was your vagina pal, would that be rude?
Vagina pal. No, it'd just be embarrassing.
That would be rude,
South
but
Park
isn't it
that.
Interesting that a girl can call a guy a dick and there's no repercussions at all?
There are to my
she
heart.
Can say, and she can even say, I'm here to get some good Jason Silva dick. And you wouldn't have any problem with that. You'd be like, yep, I'm dishing it out, honey.
Yeah.
But if a guy says, oh, I'm here to get some Sweet Mary pussy, she'd be like, what the fuck?
It's because they're
really?
The gatekeepers.
That's who I am? I'm Sweet Mary pussy? You don't think that's gross? And you're like, oh, my God, you're not really my friend. Can't even joke around with you.
Jason, what do you think is going to happen with these sex androids? What do you see as the future?
I think the sex technology will probably be the pioneer. I mean, just like with porn, the porn industry pioneered DVDs when DVDs were first a thing. Who do you think was doing the most advanced, like, multi-angle interactive DVD experiences was the porn industry. I mean,
as soon as they said phones wasn't going to go with that old style of video,
yeah.
All of porn was like, cool, we'll update.
Yeah, exactly.
The iPhone never did. The rest of them,
totally. I mean, we're always going to be driven by sort of our sexual desires. Kurzweil says we'll be able to tap into each other's nervous systems and become each other when we have sex with
our that's
girlfriend.
Combining with someone.
Ew.
Like imagine actually merging.
That is.
Well, but no, but some people say, you know, the Kama Sutra talks about we've been wanting to merge with our lovers since the beginning of time. We want to become one. But imagine if we can actually scramble our nervous systems together because we have the Demolition Man device or whatever. Remember
that's
that?
That could be a real mind fuck though if you just find out that you are like the worst in bed ever. You
or
feel what
better.
It's like to be fucked by
Holy
you.
Holy shit.
You're
look at
like,
that. That's very eloquent.
Look at me. I'm this why am I doing that?
No, that's going to be for 16 to 25.
Even better. Take it. So you don't like it. Take it.
Yeah, you come up, your eyes would pop over like, why am I choking myself? Why won't you let me breathe, me?
Or even worse, what if you get into her mind, like if you can access your girlfriend's needs and desires?
Right.
And you go, I want to know what you want. And you get into her mind. It's just a river of black cock.
Black
just a
cock.
Sleepy river of disembodied black cocks just shooting shooting sperm like a psychedelic dream. You're riding a river of dark black cocks.
It's not black cock, it's slippery. Like it's a eels. River of pit bull cocks.
Yeah, well, you know, like it's good to allow for a lot of creativity in sort of our sexual consciousness. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's on the side. Let's get ahead with
into
it.
A multiplicity of dimensions that we can't even imagine. It's the, you know, black psychedelicization of sexuality.
Isn't it amazing, though, that that drives a lot of our technology lately, but we still have to repress it societally. Mm-hmm.
Sex?
Well, yeah. I think that's
it still has to be like looked on as embarrassing.
The reproductive force. It's the drive. It's the wind in the sails of humanity. It drives everything.
And people are like, what's that wind?
Actually, have you guys, actually like a book about this. It's called The Mating Mind. It was written by Jeffrey Miller, and he says that the brain's extraordinary capacities for creativity, for discourse, for everything we do, even build airplanes and iPhones, is ultimately our glorified version of the peacock feather. It's our version of the bird song.
Right.
It's just us charming to capture and manage the attention of those potential mates. It's a way of saying, I'm poetic, I built that skyscraper, or I wrote you this song.
So's every joke every comedian's ever told.
Everything.
Just to try to
what's interesting is that the side effect of this sexual creativity is also responsible for everything wonderful we've created. So it talks about the whole thing about sexuality ultimately as a creative act.
It is.
Because it's about reproduction.
Yeah.
But ultimately on a cultural level and on a idea sex level, like the whole fucking thing about reproduction seems to be like...
Right. We used to think we're getting lured by nature into making babies, but now we see we're being lured by nature into making spaceships.
Well, that's why the pill changed so much in society too.
Yes. That's why the singularity is a cosmic orgasm is the best way to describe what the singularity is. It's the universe waking up. It's up. It's us impregnating the universe.
That's
with
the great Marshall McLuhan quote. You know that quote? Human beings are the sex organs of the machine world.
Wow.
Brilliant. That's brilliant.
Marshall McLuhan nailed that shit in the 60s.
Of the machine world, like the machines are controlling
before us. Before computers.
Yeah.
He figured that out before computers.
He was an actual genius. He also said, first we build the tools, then they build us.
Yep. Right.
Think about that.
Yeah. It's happening. That's true.
Of course it's happening.
But again, much like Da Vinci, what a mind fuck it must have been to be operating like that back in the 50s.
You know what Da Vinci also did? He figured out how to draw curves, how to draw rounded edges in art. Like, no one knew how to like make it like so. You can't just. It's like to go around and like loses frame. You know how like a path will go out to nothing.
Nobody knew how to do that.
He was the one who. I don't know if I remember from high school.
Maybe right. Yeah, whatever. Let's attribute it to him.
Some along those lines.
He was a good guy. He deserves it. He put in his hours.
I love that stuff though because it's like, well, what aren't we doing now?
That we'll have like for granted. We'll take for granted in 100 years. Like, what? What do you mean
they didn't walk through walls?
Why didn't they?
It's true.
They walked around every time.
Yeah.
Why?
What a strange world it must have been back then, man. When you could just die if you got sick. Most people just died.
They thought
50% mortality rate for children.
Completely. And most people, and there's a lot of people though today that think that that things are getting worse in the world, which is another one of those like mistakes that people make.
We're living longer than ever.
We're living longer than ever. And there's a guy called Hans Rosling who has these amazing videos on the internet that show every nation in the world by every measurable indicator of quality of life has been
measurable
for the last 100 years.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
No, but it just shows that, you know, contrary to what the media in which it leads feeds us because we have these overactive fear-based amygdalas that only pay attention to what's wrong. We fail to see everything that's going right.
Yeah.
You know what's the most confusing shit? Really hot newscasters telling you horrible things.
Like, that's not confusing,
so confused.
At all.
She's got big tits and I'm scared out of my mind. Mm-hmm. My dick is hard and I'm ready to run. Like everything is together.
Yeah.
So rude. You know, show me
put someone ugly for bad
you're
news.
You're going to tell me some bad news. Tell it like get my high school teachers.
And then switch them in when they go, and this just in a puppy found alive and healthy.
Ah, and then the big tits come out ready to party.
Yeah.
But you could tell a lot about Bill O'Reilly. Like, I promise you that Bill O'Reilly loves getting tied up. I can't say that for sure.
So? No,
that's
for
a
sure.
guess.
Okay.
Like, whatever legal
sure.
stuff is, I guess. But I would imagine Bill O'Reilly, because he's always like on his show, it's always these like beautiful yet dominating hot girls that surround him. Like, he likes to be around these types of girls.
Oh.
He loves it. You never see the women around him on that show as being like submissive to him. They're always kind of tough.
Yeah.
Guaranteed they scrub him down.
When you think about this, do you masturbate?
Scrub him down.
What?
Do you masturbate thinking about Bill O'Reilly?
All the time.
Do you imagine ever that you were some really fucking stupid guy like Bill O'Reilly? A smart, stupid guy. Like, he's a Harvard graduate dummy. You know, he's one of those guys.
I'm going to go with Jesus. What does he say? His thing about Jesus? He's like, I'm going to go with
Jesus.
I'm going to go with the Jesus guy.
Why does the tide come in? Why does it go out?
Oh, that Dawkins interview when Dawkins, the smile on Dawkins' face is the smile of the Lord of the Rings necromancer as he's crushing just like a little imp or something. It was just
what does he say?
The look on his face because he's like,
Dawkins, though, from my taste, gets a little too upset.
What's that?
Dawkins?
Richard Dawkins, you talking about? Richard Dawkins?
For my super genius, atheist, reasonable people talking to cuckoo heads.
Yeah.
I like my my atheist to be a little bit more relaxed.
Completely like.
I think it was a great reaction.
He's a little on the cunty side.
What did he say to him?
He shot him Dawkins has got.
He's a little on the cunty side.
A hammer smile. O'Reilly deserves a.
Oh, for sure. Don't get me wrong. But I think that Dawkins, at his age, is such a statesman. Such a well-respected,
probably showing
man.
Off too.
Maybe, perhaps, and maybe also he feels it's his duty to maybe mercenary go after those guys because he is the intellectual voice for the atheists. You know,
right?
He's super important in that way. I just wish he would chill. And you know, one of the things that I found out about him is no psychedelic drugs in his background.
Wow,
that's true.
And he talked about how he maybe would be interested in taking LSD under a very clinical setting to explore the merits of the drug.
Yeah.
You know what that says to me? That's where the hole is. That's where the hole's in his game. That's why he comes off cunty.
Well, it's interesting because another one of our atheists,
what are you waiting for, man? What are you waiting for?
Sam Harris has done psychedelics. In fact, he wrote an essay called "Psychedelics and the Meaning of Life," which was actually a very brilliant piece. And for he's an interesting guy because he's an atheist, but he has some radical insights about spiritual subjective experience and where
he gets
that
lumped
from.
In with Islamophobes. You know,
really?
Yeah, but I don't find that his writing comes across that way.
A lot of people argue that. It does. He's a brilliant man and a friend. I really like the guy very much.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy talking to him because he's got such a fucking stupid smart mind.
Yeah.
His brain is just like firing like at
brilliant.
A million hertz.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing about the label of Islamophobe is like the reality is all ideologies that force people into doing violent things are crazy. And
100%.
To try to pretend that they're not to make some people who aren't violent happy seems like intellectually dishonest. And that's
Completely.
Where the guy
just
has
the ideology,
he has courage. It's
of
not
course
that
he's
an
courage.
Islamophobe.
Not at all. He
if
says
Islam was Buddhism.
Yeah.
Okay, think about Buddhism. Right. And by the way, this is a radical new sect of Buddhism apparently that's like involved in like ethnic cleansing and some kind
oh,
of
Oh yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Oh, they're fucking up Buddhism. Like it's the last safe place after being a Mormon. You know, go to last
yeah, Buddhists
safe
get
cult.
Angry. Yeah,
but I mean, apparently, but
Malaysia
humans are imperfect, man. I think it's something like that. I don't really remember where it was, but humans are so imperfect, you know. And the idea that there's anything wrong with saying that ancient ideologies that involve killing people if they don't believe are fucking bad.
Yeah. No,
I mean, isn't
true.
It? Doesn't it say that somewhere?
Yeah,
of course. Well, you can't be tolerant of intolerance. I mean, that's the problem with moral relativism and which is this fear of like passing any kind of judgment because it's a different religion. So what if they beat each other to death?
Yeah, but it's like,
you
want to be like, do whatever you want, but don't let someone do something against someone's will to
100%.
Them.
100%. Yes. You can't tolerate intolerance. Yeah. And behavior like that obviously is intolerance. That's where the buck stops. Bill Maher has spoken about
this a lot.
Sacrifice.
You know what's weird,
way.
Though? Here's what's weird.
Bill Maher?
You said Bill Maher. Bill Maher gets labeled as an Islamophobe, which I find fascinating because progressives, for some reason, it's almost like they're bullied, so they want to make friends with the bully.
Yeah.
So there's this weird progressive thing where you don't criticize Islam. And if you do, you become an Islamophobe. Or if someone is criticizing other religions, that's the first thing that they say. Oh, you never criticize Islam. How come you never say shit about Islam?
Yeah.
So it becomes this weird sort
Very
of polar because they're so gangster.
Yeah,
you know they'll kill you if you draw pictures of Muhammad. Like
right.
they take shit to the next level. So the natural inclination of the biggest pussies on earth, which are the liberals for the most part,
let them do it.
They not only let them do it, but support them.
Yeah.
You're Islamophobic. You know, Bill Maher and his Islamophobe. Guess what? You should be an you believe a phobe. Whether it's UFOs or Bigfoot or Chupacabras or Islam
exactly.
or Joseph Smith or
Jesus. You're not a Christophobe because you're against them raping little boys.
If you believe anything that you haven't seen yourself or watched on TV, you're an idiot.
Well, this is the thing, Joe. This is the thing. This is the thing you were talking about earlier when it comes to the DMT experience or the psychedelic experience. And the question is, does it matter if this is real or not? And I think it matters more than anything if it's real. We must understand reality from subjective reality. We must understand. If we can, we should try to understand it. For example, who was it? I can't remember. It was talking.
Only when it affects someone else,
but
I would argue.
But I'm saying it doesn't matter because it's the same experience. The experience is not a tangible, rock-solid, carbon-based, touch-a-table experience. The experience is this spiritual, which I fucking hate to use, but there's no other way to use it, disembodied consciousness. It's a disembodied consciousness experience. Why would that be the same as an experience that's real, that where you can touch paper?
Here's why. Where is it people go to get healed? Lourdes, I think is what it's called.
Sinai is also like that.
I can't remember who wrote this. I think it might have been Sagan. Or no, it might have been Feynman. I can't remember which one. Talking about how it's important to understand if this phenomena is real or subjective. Because if it's real, then that means that we should understand what are the properties of these waters. Is it something in the land? Is it something in the air? Mm-hmm.
Right.
And if we can understand that, then minerals. We can help the whole planet with this. In the same way, if the DMT or the psychedelic experience is taking us into a state that is non-subjective, that is external, is actually introducing us to entities or intelligences that somehow exist outside of our own being, it's incredibly important to begin to communicate with them in a real way.
What is real? That's where it becomes. When you're talking about an outside of the body experience, an experience that transcends the physical flesh, it could still be real but not be measurable. It could still be real, but you can't put it in a bucket and throw it on a scale.
It's not measurable.
It doesn't mean it's not real.
I think it could be a chemical gateway.
Yeah, it could be something we don't have an instrument to measure. Yes. We don't have a conceptual framework understanding.
But it's still real if it happens. That's what my point is. The idea of the imagination, you imagine something.
Yeah.
The imagination is responsible for every fucking thing that a human has ever made.
100%.
Sure.
Clothes, right. This microphone that I'm talking to, this computer that I'm on, this clothes that I'm wearing, the car that drove me here, it's all manifested out of the imagination. So the imagination is fucking real as shit.
100%. And before you created those things, when you just imagined them, you were conjuring up something that didn't exist.
Right.
And the fact that we then brought it into existence proves, well, it at least existed as a potentiality.
Yeah,
it was allowed by the laws of physics. So then it makes you wonder, what are you tapping into when you're having that kind of vision?
Right.
That disembodied, reconceptualization of reality. Well, when you live in a world where there is no airplanes and you think that you could build a machine that will fly over the ocean and get you to this other place. Like, to imagine that, to even fantasize about it.
Yes.
If we can utter it, it means that it's possible.
Gene Roddenberry invented the iPad.
I mean,
did he really?
Does anybody even know how cell phones work?
Yeah, but like,
can you explain
they do
to me how
things.
A cell phone works?
How a cell phone works?
Yeah. Look at stuff. I don't know. They went like
they
that.
Swipe?
Yeah.
They swiped?
Yeah, it did it all. Picard.
Wow. Picard wasn't Roddenberry, though, was it?
I mean, yeah, I think he did that and then died.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah.
Well, he had a lot of success.
Yeah, he pretty.
But he didn't get to see the future.
He didn't get to see Deep Space Nine. You're right.
Those motherfuckers.
I just think that I think we should try.
That's what bemoaning Roddenberry's life because he never saw Deep Space Nine.
He never saw the new Battlestar Galactica, which fucking he's lucky.
It's so good.
That show kicked his show right in the dick.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say it was
Star
bad.
Star Trek is such shit compared to Battlestar Galactica.
Oh my god,
I never watched.
Every problem you have, every time you're thinking like, oh, they're doing this is lame. Yeah. Within two seasons, it'll pay off and be like, oh,
dude, wow. Battlestar Galactica on the Sci-Fi Channel was the greatest,
amazing
sci-fi show ever.
Amazing.
And it doesn't get any
dealt with it in a real way.
Yeah,
real like situations. Same way Game of Thrones has whores, and murders.
Oh, by the way, how hot is that robot bitch? The blonde one.
In what show?
Oh, so the hottest.
Ridiculous.
I've burned holes in socks.
Oh, the Cylons? The Cylons become hot chicks. That's part of the plot.
Oh, cool.
I don't want to. Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen the DVD series, you got to get that.
Get it right now.
How do you have time?
I was incredulous. Brian Callen told me about that. I'm like, that's going to suck, dude. It's a remake of a show that was kind of hokey. This show is not hokey at all.
Joe, in all seriousness, man, because you're like one of the busiest people I know. How do you find time to watch Battlestar Galactica and Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones?
I don't have hardly any time. Right
but you
now,
already
I
watched
couldn't.
Battlestar.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. When I was just doing Fear Factor in the UFC, I had way more time.
Right.
It was back in the days of Breaking Bad. It just started.
Yeah,
things were different back then.
I watched most of Breaking Bad while getting tattooed. I watched the first season while getting my left arm done. Right arm, sorry. held my right arm.
Yeah, I'm
out,
trying
too.
To catch up on Breaking Bad. I fucking love it.
It great it's show. So good. You have to catch yeah. up.
You know what's
so
better?
You can talk about it with
Homeland.
People. Homeland's pretty good.
Better.
I heard that was
better. I watched season one. It was, I'm up to season two.
Stunningly good. Stunningly good
What do
show.
You guys think of Walking Dead?
It's awesome and sucks at
it's
the same
hokey
time.
As yes. fuck sometimes.
Yep. No shit.
Every time they resolve a conflict, it's over the way yes. they describe their emotions. Yeah.
This guy,
and now it's all done.
The guy, the spoiler alert, the bad guy, the number one bad guy in the third season.
The
mayor. Yeah, come
I'm,
on,
I'm
dude.
Up to this part.
Like, you guys are teetering on the edge of fucking this whole thing up. You need to regroup. Get together as a group of writers, do some mushrooms, and figure out where the fuck you're going.
Duncan, you told me that they had this other writers, and then it got really emotional for a while, and then they came in and said, guys, everybody get the fuck out, and they hired like legit like action guys.
This is here's the problem, I think. The problem is TV, not the writers. It's what TV tends to do to creativity. If you read the comics are some of the most bleak, horrific things that you've ever seen where it's like every few pages is a gut punch where you're like, what the fuck? It's not like this like emotional kind of sappy thing. It's like you are existing in a world where you are going to die probably by being eaten by the undead.
Yeah, that's what they always say in Apocalypse. They always
so
say,
wait, sorry. What are you saying about that versus the world of TV?
Like I'm saying what happens because TV is like, we can't make it too dark. We can't kill that character.
Well, do you think because there's an established business model and we have to keep some kind of stability in the system and we don't want to stuff this up to make you question too much?
They didn't like Homicide. Homicide didn't last because they didn't have any clear-cut victories for the good guys and bad guys.
I'm going to do a spoiler.
Is that why they call it programming?
Let me do it. Not with a series, but with the comic books. Can I do a spoiler?
Why would you spoiler it?
The comic books?
Don't spoiler.
You just spoiler alert. Say spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, but it's a spoiler to me. And
you're not
going to
read
the
comics.
How dare you? How dare you pretend I don't read?
What are you going to get to?
No, listen to this bastard. I had comics on my iPad once on a plane, and you mercilessly made fun of me for the entire flight about the fact that I had comics on my
iPad. You know why I kept going?
Why?
Because you responded. I couldn't help myself. You responded. I'm like, I got him dancing.
You gotta play dead in front of a bear, man. You can't fight back.
Now I'm a bear. I always thought of myself as a twink. I guess my time has come. Yeah, you were fucking dancing.
You ever read The Road? That's pretty bleak.
The Road is a fucking. You might as well just get punched in the face. Just get kicked in the stomach instead of reading
that. I had
book.
To regroup for about a year. Yes. Also, this is what movie sent me into depression more than anything.
Which one?
Revolutionary Road.
What's that?
That's brilliant, dude.
Oh, my
that
God.
That was with DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, and it's about a married couple, and it flashes back and forth between the banality of day-to-day life, like what happens after you get what you want, versus the hopes and dreams of when they first met.
It made me feel bad about existence. It just didn't read about the bushes.
You know what it did? It made you collide against frustrated ambitions and a life of having to settle and settle into become a stale facsimile of what you want.
It makes you
were.
Go find your dreams
it's,
after that. It's one way or the
not,
other.
Well,
I'm
the
not
sequence is when
it.
They get excited about Paris is the best part of the movie. You're just like, oh yes, they're going to move to Paris. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be like a Richard Linklater film. They're going to be in Europe. You know, it's going to be so good. And then it doesn't happen.
I know. I was like, yes, it's going to be awesome for you.
Yes.
By the way, I want to give a report. I'm going to report on what you've been looking at on the laptop during this thing.
Okay.
It's now gone from a series of videos of like weird vintage cars, Porsches. At one point, he was just looking at what do you call it, an accelerometer? You're just looking at like a car like the speedometer accelerating. That was like 5 minutes. You're just
still
looking
carrying
at
the conversation.
A car speeding, and now you're looking at pool.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Duncan, but I'm crazy.
What are you looking at? He's looking at pool cues? Is he looking at pool cues?
He's looking at people playing pool.
I have an ADD that you couldn't possibly understand. And
there's no rhyme or rhythm to it.
I need 13 different things going on in my life.
It's like
the
drums on War Pigs.
It
makes no sense.
I am what I am, son.
Do you want to see a two-minute trippy video?
Yes.
I did a new video that says we are already cyborgs. It's kind of about the stuff from the conference we were just at.
Yeah, but let's pass that joint around before
that. No gay stuff
either,
right?
No.
Well, get you one. I'll get you your own. How about that?
Oh, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
we live
in
the
world
future.
Of abundance. Look at that, Duncan. This is
we're the new Romans.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks, Joe.
Rogan Studios is the new Roman Empire for weed.
I don't give a fuck, dude. We're so
barf
gangster.
And come back for more.
Yeah, we're like vomitoriums.
Do you ever go to one of those?
a vomitorium. They exist.
Well, no, they just show the old ones in Israel.
Oh,
Jerusalem.
No!
And they show you where you have to go to vomit, and they come right back to party. No. And they left out the part about fucking kids, but.
What's a vomitorium?
You just eat and party and drink. Just keep going and going, and you're like, oh, I can't eat anymore. You know that moment where you like can't eat anymore?
And then they vomit.
You go to this room where you just get to vomit,
and then you come back.
They all play with each other.
It's like
vomit.
A urinal, but instead of peeing, you just vomit out as much as you can of the booze and the food, and you go back to drinking and eating.
Yeah, the Romans supposedly did it with feathers. That was the you know.
Really?
Oh, they stuck it down their throats.
Never heard this before?
The vomitorium.
Kind of makes sense.
Romans wanted to party so hard that they were willing to just eat as much as they wanted to and then throw up so they could eat again.
The way Itzkoff thinks of living forever, they thought of partying forever.
Right.
Well, it's also because mortality was at such a high level back then.
Ever present.
Infant mortality was 50%. Yeah. People were dying left and right in sword fights. I mean, it was some crazy ass times.
Yeah.
But how much different is that? How much different?
Oh, shit.
Emergency.
He wipes it up with free t-shirts. I love it.
That's my shirt.
Oh, is it?
That's a big deal. It's a higherprimate.com shirt. Available at higherprimate.com.
They're also great for mopping up spills.
Yeah, you can mop up booze with them.
They wash right off.
Those salt crystals are great, man. I got to get some of those.
They're cool if you want to bang yoga teachers.
What?
Like salt crystals? Yeah, nobody wants to do that. Yeah.
If you had a house and it was totally set up, like you were like, Satnam, come into my presence. You had an om on the wall, and like these are beside your bed. Dude, you're in. And all you need is like some quote from some really obscure Indian guy on the wall. Like, oh, he's my guru.
I just have a video of Duncan playing behind the bed.
Oh, Duncan gets to start singing
it's my
shit.
Apartment.
Duncan, oh, it's your Duncan. Apartment?
Oh. I'm describing his apartment to a T. I'm trying to fuck with him.
You're like, dude, why are you telling people about my stuff?
If Duncan could actually sing them songs, you could sing. You have chants in your head, right?
Oh, my God.
The one I'm chanting right now is a great chant because it sounds exactly the way nitrous oxide sounds when you do nitrous oxide. If you chant it long enough, it's the sound of when you get super high. And so the chant is R-A-M, yeah. Ram. It's simple. So the chant just goes Ram, 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 Ram.
Oh, that is when you do whippets.
Ram, 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 Ram.
You hear that when you do whippets?
When you do whippets, yeah, the sound just does that.
You're hearing the om.
What you're hearing is your brain cells committing suicide.
Please.
By slamming.
You're hearing your brain cells dance. You're hearing your brain cells tap dance and joy.
Give you like brain damage
for just a short amount of time.
Nitrous oxide.
I'm pretty sure nitrous oxide. What dentists
give you? It's the same thing dentists give you.
I'm pretty sure going to the dentist is not good.
You're right about that.
Yeah,
but that's a simple, great chant that you could do at any time. Rom, rom.
Yeah, but what is that chant that you do? That crazy one that you have memorized? That's what I'm talking about. You know that whole. Oh my god.
Oh my god.
You haven't memorized now. That's the chant that goes. Om Gananya Tmarandasya Ganan Ganashalaikya Kakshurun Militamina Tesme Shri Garave Nama Shri Jatanya Mano Bistam Tapitamina Bhutale Savayam Rupakadyamayam Dadate Zavyapadintikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vajnaivam Sha Shri Rupam Sagredata Sajanagranatham Vitam Tam Vitam Sad Shit.
Do you still do that thing with the bit that you use that in?
I lost it. What?
So wait, what is that?
That's amazing.
That's a chant that you say at the beginning. You might pray if you were into bhakti yoga. You would pray that prior to reading the Bhagavad Gita, and that's a prayer that is the first verse is very beautiful. It goes, "I was born into the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge." Wow. Which I love that a lot. But it's like basically the idea is like when you come into contact with truth, which is what any of the sutras are. By the way, I love the Bhagavad Gita, but I've just started reading the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali.
Yeah.
Which are fucking great, man. They blow the Bhagavad Gita out of the water as far as I'm concerned.
You don't
concerned.
Find it pretentious at all?
What?
The second thing you said? I forget it. Sorry.
I was cool. which part?
I don't know.
Yes.
I was joking.
I think it can seem pretentious, and I think that people can use it as a tail feather, as you mentioned, and I will fully admit that I've used it as a tail feather before. But I think in the same way that you were talking about how like reproduction kind of lures you into creating robots or advances society, in the same way I think people get drawn to philosophy for reasons that are just like, well, this will make me seem smart.
On the one hand, but also with tail feathers, I think that people worry about it in other people.
But what's crazy about this stuff is that once you get into it for weird reasons, but once you get into it, then it starts deconstructing you. It starts breaking you apart because it's going to this very micro level of the way that we tend to work subjectively, which is what
But that subjective experience is the only thing that ultimately matters, you know, in terms of your interior world, right? I mean, you talk about truth. I think it was Werner Herzog, the documentary filmmaker, that was talking about the difference between ecstatic truth and factual truth. And he said, you know, if facts were the most interesting thing in the world, then the phone book would be the world's most interesting book. Right. But obviously there's this other experience that we still call truth. Maybe it's italicized or whatever it is, but it's that ecstatic truth. It's subjective truth. It's the truth of the poet. You know, a journalist may be more accurate in describing the facts of an event, but a poet may nevertheless
LeBron James
reveal,
dug deep and found the way to overcome the Spurs.
Whatever it is, the poet reveals deeper truths that find no place in the other's literal grid.
Well, this is
Werner Herzog is an interesting cat.
Very interesting.
Oh, I fucking love him, man. I just saw him in Spring Break. Wait, no, not Spring Breakers. What did I see him? He played a villain. No, Jack Reacher.
Yeah, he was so weird. Yeah, he was great, but wasn't it weird?
Mm-hmm. Milky eye. He's got that milky eye. He's a good actor.
He's a great actor, which is weird.
Yeah, I love Werner Herzog, man. He's the shit.
I would really love to get him off the record to give his opinion on Grizzly Man, whether or not he knew that he was making a comedy.
He knew. Werner Herzog knows he's making comedy because in all of his documentaries is an element of comedy.
He's mocking the person that
he is smart enough to know what the person watching his movie is thinking. And he knows when he does this stuff, he knows that we are thinking this has got to be a comedy. Werner Herzog's hilarious.
If that's the case.
And cynical.
In that sense, then that might be, Grizzly Man might be the greatest creation all of comedy.
Yeah, real subtle.
It's a wonderful comedy.
So subtle and so goddamn brilliantly crazy. It's wonderful. It like celebrates people and all our wackiness. And there's like a certain comfort in watching a film about a guy who's completely off the rails, that's living with grizzlies.
Yeah.
Like it as we, you know, we might not like it, but it makes us feel better about ourselves, man. I mean, we got a guy who's way more fucked up than us. It makes us feel better about ourselves.
But did you find him also kind of fascinating?
I thought it was actually fascinating
because that's the thing about when you watch a movie. I mean, part of what happens when you're watching a movie is the same thing. They've done REM on people when they've done fMRI scans on people when they watch movies, and they say it's very similar to when you're dreaming.
Uh-huh.
So the self-awareness disappears. And so that's why you're able to like become the character that you identify with. They call it the deictic shift when you assume the viewpoint of one of the characters.
Yeah.
So you watch a film like Grizzly Man, it allows you to actually enter the consciousness perhaps of this person.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole thing about cinema allows us to do. That's why a film like that might be fascinating.
Say that name for the shift again.
The deictic shift.
See, I love that that's term, awesome. Man, because enlightenment is the ultimate shift, which is where you do the deictic shift.
You assume the viewpoint of the whole.
To the whole. That's the idea, is like we are always on the precipice of this final shift.
Yes.
And we're terrified to make that shift because we want to be an individual. And the idea of going backwards that one time, of taking off the neurological VR goggles, the sociological VR goggles,
the consensus trance, the cultural operating system.
We don't want to do it. We don't want
to
do it.
It's terrifying. It's easier to become another person in a movie than it is to become the whole.
Yes.
Just you know, at least explaining it makes my heart race.
It's terrifying.
No, but the reason I did it is because I love movies a lot. Since I was a little kid, I would watch movies. And one of the coolest experiences is that you became Indiana Jones. Like for 2 hours, were Indiana Jones.
So
you were finding the So what is happening? Like how come sometimes you become the movie and other times you don't? And when you don't, like life sucks, right?
Right.
Like, oh, I'm watching this movie. It's not sucking me in, right? So then I wanted to study that. Yeah. And they say that, you know, movie watching and dreaming are strangely familiar familiar experiences, similar experiences, but apparently it has to do with your self-awareness, the lateral prefrontal cortex, the same thing that turns off when people are in flow states, when rappers are freestyling.
Right.
The self-editing, the self-consciousness disappears. And we love transcending our self-consciousness because it's the moment in which we see that there's an infinite amount of subjective experiences that we can have.
Wow.
We can be Indiana Jones. We can be, you know, anybody we want. You know, we're not bound by our individuated state, which as amazing as it is still limited.
connected.
Is that lateral prefrontal cortex that you're talking about, is that the neocortex, or is that is the neocortex?
I have no idea. It says lateral, so I imagine it's on this side.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But this is the reason I saw this is because it was talking about it in the article about movies and you blending into the films, but also another article was talking about flow states and when they did fMRI scans on freestyle rappers. Yes. Versus memorized, and it was like the same thing.
But this is a terrifying thing for people. The flow state that you're talking about, if you have identified yourself with a level of suffering or with a level of control or with a level of always being the thing driving the car, then this flow state you're talking about is a form of death. You don't want to be there. A lot of people, the people who are suck in bed are the ones who are the most wanting to be in control. The people who have the most awful marijuana trips are always the control freaks. Yeah. It's like,
I can't look
But think about it. The reason that movies are so good at it is because first they sit you in a really comfortable place. It's a comfortable seat. You're in the dark. The phones are off. They make sure that you are comfortable so that they can ease you in. And when the movie starts, you're still yourself. You're still fidgeting. You might have to pee. But as soon as it starts, they guide you with music.
Yes.
The set and setting inform the direction that your consciousness is going. And before you know it, you're on a ride. Like the roller coaster has started, and all of a sudden you forget yourself. Yes.
You are the story. Just like mushroom trips.
And then at the end of the day, it becomes the best experience ever, right? Because when the great movie's done, you're like, wow, that was awesome. I don't know where I went, right. But I loved it, right? But when the movie sucks, it was a really unpleasant experience. So we love losing ourselves, but it's also what we're most terrified of.
So this is the idea that when we die, the exact same experience happens where you're like, holy shit,
maybe.
That was fucking amazing. I thought I was a human? Wow!
Well, maybe.
No kidding, right? Yeah. Well, maybe it's just an extended period of dreaming.
Yeah.
You know, the
maybe it's a movie within a movie within a movie.
8 hours becomes a dream state of 80 years.
That's why the movie Inception is so brilliant.
Yeah.
When they go into limbo. Limbo was 80 years. Our entire life could be one of those limbos that we forgot that we decided to go to sleep. Yeah. We could be in the dream within
Inception
dream.
Inception didn't really lock me in. I don't know why.
You should have been more high when you saw it.
I don't know, maybe.
No, I wouldn't understand. I think Inception was a little, like, what? It was a little too refined. It was a little, you had to follow it a little too closely. It was a little too much.
He was explaining
like
it
to you. Like a Rubik's Cube or something. I'm sure you like that. I'm sure your mind likes that. I like, you know, it wasn't like The Matrix, which is sort of a more of a visceral thing, but it's still, they're both pointing to the same idea, which is that whatever your experience of reality is may in fact just be a dream state or some kind of hallucination or an aspect of a simulation that you've become absorbed
into. You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. Because I actually brought something to read to you guys about The Matrix. So I'm going to load it up.
Oh, cool.
And it's exactly about this conversation we're having. It's almost like I thought at some point we're going to start talking about blending into movies and breaking the ego and that whole thing.
So I'm just going to load it up. Whatever happened to that lady that was suing the person that the brothers that made The Matrix? Mm-hmm. Do you remember that whole thing?
I thought she lost.
Mm-hmm. Did she really?
Or there was a settlement maybe.
Are you sure?
There was a settlement. Yeah, I think I remember that.
Settlement. Yeah, that never means anything, does it? Right? That sometimes means you want your back.
All right.
You're just bored of dealing with it.
Yeah, sometimes it's that.
It's also mean like you're going to win. How about we just stop this right now?
Yeah, 80%. Sometimes it's that too. It's different things. Maybe she had an original idea and they took it to a different place, but maybe they can trace the origins of that idea.
So get the fuck out of here.
Bitch.
Who is this?
There was a woman who sued the brothers making The Matrix.
Former Wachowski brothers, now the Wachowski siblings.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like I named Gloria Larson.
That's lame.
Okay,
Gloria Larson? You're just going from memory on that? That'd be great if you got it right.
Why won't the story about Sophia Stewart in her own Matrix? No, that's not it. Matrix?
Let's hear it.
Okay. Let me read you this while you search for that. So this is an article by Eric Davis, and he's talking about Descartes and The Matrix and the false reality genre of filmmaking. So films that reveal a crack in your reality, the possibility of a hidden door, of a rabbit hole to fall through. And so he says, you know that scene in The Matrix when he's in the hotel room and they're about to give him the pill?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the craziest part of the movie. So he says, we too are in that decrepit hotel room with Lawrence Fishburne's Morpheus, who is really speaking to us when he addresses Neo, the ever-wooden Keanu Reeves. You know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your whole life.
Right. We weren't.
You felt that something is wrong with the world. You don't know what, but it's like there, like a splinter in your mind. And establishing that itch, which I suppose most of us share, however we interpret it, Morpheus offers to scratch. He will give Neo nothing more than knowledge of the truth, i.e. no solutions to the problems posed by said truth. And then he goes on and he says, like a serpent in the Garden of Eden, Which okay, so hold
on.
Morpheus offers Neo a pill, like the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Morpheus offers Neo a pill. Neo, of course, swallows the molecular package, which is really the most heroic act in the film. For Neo must then pass his own Cartesian passage through madness, melting into the mirror that alludes not only to Lewis Carroll, but to the mystic psychotic collapse and disappearance of the externalized ego that stabilizes our inner void.
Right.
As Neo phases out of the Matrix, he opens up, however briefly, the fractured bardo that is the secret thrill of every fan of the false reality genre, the moment when baseline reality dissolves, but no new reality has yet emerged in its pixelating wake.
Cool. That's great, man. That's,
I mean, so the fact that Eric Davis reads this deeply into the film, that's why you guys got to chat with him.
Yeah.
So let's listen to Stuart, the case. She it was dismissed when she failed to show up for a preliminary hearing of her case.
Oh.
So that can mean one of two things. Either it means she's crazy or they paid her to not show up.
No, she would just like...
No.
Why not? They made a settlement with her off the record.
Yeah, but they don't just not show up, and they say, like,
then
we made
a
settlement.
Maybe they scared the shit out of her and told her not to show up. Something happened. She didn't show up.
You think they scared her, the Walensky?
I mean, maybe she had no case at all, and she was just crazy.
Remember the guy who sued me because
I
was your lawyer?
Oh, that's right.
The angel of God.
The angel of God, yeah. I was his lawyer. I had to get a lawyer to go to court.
Yeah.
How long were you in court with that thing?
About a year.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
How many times did you have to go to court?
To keep responding to them. He sued me for being a false prophet. And no, I'm sorry. He wanted to sue. Yeah, being a bad lawyer, the Better Business Bureau came after me.
So you lost the case?
No. This girl Lisa helped me fight the case, and I had to show her. He was suing me for all the riches in the world. And then when she had to read it to the judge, like, this guy's crazy. She's like, what do you mean? She goes, read that. And she did. The judge read it. And he was like, oh. And so they made him rewrite it. And he goes, okay, that $800 billion was what he sued me for.
Well, all the riches in the world.
Mm-hmm. That leaves a lot on the table. It's a lot of room for negotiation. I mean, assuming that you're going to continue to be more successful.
He did promise me, though, that when he did eventually become King of Kings, he could repay me with... untold riches.
King of Kings is a big title for a guy living in a homeless shelter.
I represent him pro bono.
I love this guy's like levels of riches. He has all the riches in the world, but that's exceeded by untold riches.
No, all the riches in the world is more.
Well, then if untold you pay riches. Him all the riches in the world and he pays you back in untold riches, you're getting ripped off.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bad...
That's what he's suing me for. I denied him.
Then he's not really paying you back. He's giving you a little bit of what you gave him.
He's giving me some for helping him.
Yeah.
That's about right.
You're just saying riches are confined to the world, Ari. I disagree.
Oh.
Untold riches could be all the riches in the universe.
You're really thinking outside that box.
You should have had me as an attorney.
Oh.
Yeah, maybe I'll hire you to represent me.
That would have been amazing. Fake attorney Duncan represents fake attorney Ari being sued by crazy guy.
He kept trying to use bigger lingo because I would sometimes. So he'd be like, where to for?
That's awesome.
The plaintiffs who are attacking me. He also wanted to sue San Diego State Hospital, and I think they really fucked him up. I think he got in the psych ward there.
Oh,
they really fucked him up. Yeah, I think.
Really?
He wanted to sue that guy, Dean.
Gelber.
Talked to the dead? Dean Edwards?
Dean Edwards.
John Edwards?
John Edwards, yeah.
John Edwards.
Dean Edwards is a comic.
Because it was just like the guy who ran for president.
Dean Edwards.
Yeah, and I remember saying, like, well, why would he said he wanted to sue him for being a false prophet. And I was like, why would you get that money?
Hey, wait, can I change the subject
you're talking logic with a crazy guy.
Let me change the subject for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
You're talking about, just because we were talking about riches outside the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This meteor harvesting thing, do you know about this?
Planetary resources.
Yeah. It's
fucking Peter Diamandis is behind it, dude. They just launched a $1 million Kickstarter project to create a space telescope for public use. Because, you know, they're launching a whole fleet of tiny space telescopes to scan for near-Earth asteroids that we can then land on and leverage for resources.
Pull back and mine.
A typical one has like $1 trillion worth of plutonium,
really?
For example. Oh, my God, insane.
Because that's why they're doing it. They're not doing this. When they're talking about how NASA wants to grab an asteroid or a meteor. It's a meteor or an asteroid?
Asteroid.
When they say this, you know they're not doing this. You know it's not just scientific reasons. They don't just want to.
Oh, no, no.
They want to harvest
it's
this shit.
Riches beyond all previous limits. But it's okay because that's just an incentive. You know?
Yeah, if they can really pull it off, and that helps
that's
everybody.
That's why they would go do that. That's why there's technology.
So
that's
they're saying there's plutonium in those things.
So that somebody can make money and then.
Yeah.
How do they know there's plutonium in those things?
Oh, they know.
They know the chemical composition.
Is it based on asteroids that have fallen to Earth?
Just like they can make estimations about what Jupiter's composed of. I mean, that's what's kind of insane about humanity.
That's
we can
exciting.
Actually use our brains to extend our sensory apparatus beyond Earth.
What's the mechanism of determining the contents of an asteroid?
But you know they knew the last few elements of the periodic table, they knew how much they'd weigh.
That's insane.
They knew where they fit in that chart. They're like, we haven't discovered them, but we know exactly what they'll weigh and how their mass
would. The ability of the human brain to acquire such knowledge about the building blocks of the physical world. What does that say about us as this unique?
You keep lumping me into that group, and that shit's preposterous. Those aren't even related to me. Those are totally different kind of animals, those people that are figuring that out.
But I don't think they are, because the fact that we can have this conversation means we can acknowledge some kind of understanding of what we're talking. I mean, I think that...
Childlike. It's a childlike understanding comparison to the dude who figured out what a quark gluon plasma particle would weigh and then made it.
Right.
Made something that if you get a sugar cube of, it'll fall straight through the center of the Earth because it'll weigh like 400 billion pounds or something crazy.
So you think it's
that's
just a different
exactly
kind of animal? You think it's just a different kind of brain? You think like if we went and sat with him for a couple weeks, he could explain it to us?
He could think in normal terms.
You know, I think people are remarkably adaptable and people go down certain paths, I think, in life.
Yeah.
And if you meet a guy who's like been a ballet dancer since he was 4 years old and now he's 25 and doing these twirls in the air and shit, you would look at that guy moving. I don't know why I chose ballet dancing. So let's just go with it. But you would look at that guy moving there going like, that guy is so far down the path, I could never possibly catch up to him.
Right.
But I think...
You could do ballet.
Human beings have a capacity for continuing down a path in a very far way to the point where they're almost unrecognizable from when they first started.
Yeah, an insane specialization, like a malleability, like an ability
to
transform.
I know that
transform.
From martial arts especially.
It's amazing how you can see that about, let's say, a ballet artist dancing and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, I can never do that.
Yeah.
And you could easily say, there's no way I could, but everybody thinks they could do stand-up.
Isn't that funny?
With no training at all. That
isn't it funny that they don't really know what we're doing? It's like they think that we're just telling jokes, and we absolutely are, but it's all about where to put them, how to say them, how to structure them.
I think comedians are philosophers. I think they're modern philosophers. They're stand-up philosophers.
It's also hypnotism. Because there's some weird thing that you're doing where you can get them into the way you're thinking.
Voice, lowering your voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you get them tuned into the way you're thinking by giving them shit that they want to listen to. Mm-hmm. And if you can find that rhythm, like where it's a thought that they would entertain themselves, then they'll allow your mind to work for them. Because this guy's got a very aware mind. I'm curious to hear how he looks at things. I'll allow him to think for me.
It's the same thing presidents do.
Yeah.
That's how you have
in
your
those
God
moments, those people are plugging into you the same way when you watch a movie. You become the character in the movie. Those people are plugging into you. Yeah. And in that moment, when you enter that flow state, do you feel like a conductor in an orchestra? Like literally, like you move
sort
in
of.
Right?
Yeah, not
conductor
even that.
In an orchestra. That's exactly how it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you guys are in a flow. You become in sync. Something there is interesting that's happening. And I don't know if we can even measure that. Like when people sync up like that.
Yeah.
Whether it's lots of people to one person or lots of people to lots of other people. Like,
yeah, you don't
what
have a
is
scale
that?
For that. You don't have a scale for that feeling.
Sure. I think you can study the way that metallic particles react to magnets. I think you can look at the way sound waves affect water.
And probably, we use those metaphors. We say he's so magnetic when he's on stage. I mean, we use those metaphors to explain something for which we have no instrumentation or way to quantify or measure, yet we employ those capacities. We use those capacities. We pay people millions of dollars because they're charismatic. Well, how do you measure charisma? Is there a little machine that measures it like radiation? Like he has 97 kelvins of charisma. So we employ these things, but we can't measure them. They exist, but we can't measure
them. You can focus attention. What you're doing, and attention is a specific pattern of neural activity. So the idea is that you have this group of people and you're transforming their neural activity to match some intention that you have, whether it's because you want them to listen to your speech about hotels.
Don't you wish you could
want
them
see
to laugh. That? Like, don't you wish there was like a special light you could use that could show that
energy
transfer?
Oh, I'm getting it. Okay, I know where
show
I am
now. We can see the cell phone signals going through us right now. Like, if I could see how my attention.
But go and watch a group of people dancing who are all in ecstasy and what you or look at the way fish move around a coral reef.
Yes.
Or look at you see this exact same undulating quality.
Insane. Like a hidden order to things. Well, there's an essay, dude, called Virtual Reality and Hallucination, written by Diana Slattery on Reality Sandwich. And it's all about that. She says the capture and management of attention is a vital component. A state of immersion, a state of absorption is a vital component in any kind of interpersonal transformation or education or influence of any capacity or growth. In other words, you need to be completely sucked into whatever it is that's going to really like transform you and get inside of you.
Yeah.
So it all has to do with the capture and management of attention. And what are psychedelics if not attention technologies, rhetoric technologies? What is language if not a technology to capture attention and shift awareness?
In that sense, that any discipline is a psychedelic experience in the long haul.
Yes.
Because disciplines transform you.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And they focus attention.
Yeah.
Tarantino they focus said all attention. For Pulp Fiction, he just wanted people to put the laundry away while they were watching. Just not fold shit. Just look at it. That's all he wanted.
What?
So he'd get lost in it. So you can get people on your
focusing side. Attention is the key to everything. If we had the power to decide at any given moment to focus our attention on the best possible thing that we could focus our attention on, our life would be like a living, breathing sculpture. It would be like a dream, like constantly.
Paul Mooney's the best.
Or
that.
It would just be you jerking off in new socks.
But think about how
sounds like a dream.
But think about how profitable being able to grab people's attention is.
And oh my God, it's everything.
It's like
it's everything. It's the currency of this new age. Attention, attention is the new limited resource. Yeah. Attention is the new oil. In a world of social media, of infinite media, infinite channels, who succeeds but the one who is most physically able to capture and manage attention? And that's where, like,
right,
you see the phenomenon of something like this. You guys, I'm always talking about, like, you know, it's been a year and people are still saying, come back and have this conversation. I mean, that just means that you've tapped into a nerve that millions are feeling. And when you consider that 10,000 hours of content is uploaded to YouTube every hour, that you still have millions of people that come and join this conversation, shows, like, the power of that. Like, it's like you know, shining a little bit brighter than the other 10,000 hours.
But it's a funny thing when the attention doesn't tune in. Like when you see Obama in Germany recently, did you see that shit?
No.
The speech he gave, ooh, it's creepy. That's like Alex Jones level creepy.
Why?
His speech in Germany. Well, no, not aside from the fact that there was only like the first time he came there, it was packed. Hordes of people came to see him. This time it was sparse and empty. But what was really creepy was his echoey message about how we have to give up freedom for security. And you hear this coming out. It's like
Obama was saying it.
Oh yeah, Oh yeah, he was saying it. He was fucking sticking up for the goddamn NSA because this leak.
Can you pull up that, Jamie? See if you can find that.
It might be a long speech, but it was spooky.
Listen to some of it,
he's out there baking in the heat, sweating, and giving this proclamation of how there's a balance between security. Just talking about the importance of the security state. And by the way, you know, there's a logical part of my brain that considers what they're saying. I have to allow myself to give consideration to what they're saying.
Me too.
You know what
course.
I mean? But there's another because
well, especially because I'm thinking, well, if this allows them to stop somebody from blowing themselves up in the subway, then cool, you know?
Yeah. What a pickle you're in. What a pickle you're in if you know that if I have this much breadth when it comes to monitoring, then I can stop people from getting blown up. What happened at the Boston Marathon? I can stop a kid from getting turned into fucking hamburger meat.
Right. Right.
So now you're basically saying, well, what do we do here? Are we going to just – do we just say, okay, well, I guess the cost of people's privacy is that from time to time children get evaporated? Or do you say, no, we've got to grow up to the fact that
– we're an interconnected system. We're all cells in a bigger organism.
It's tough.
And we don't want to give up our security as a people. I don't think the price is worth it.
We can't trust the government.
Not only that, I think we're looking at the thing incorrectly. I think the thing that they should be concentrating on is the mental health issue.
Yeah.
So what makes people willing to lash out and kill large numbers of people?
That's another thing. Instead of investing in defense, you can invest in research for mental health and you would solve a lot more murders.
We know when babies are born.
Potentially,
okay?
I agree
we
with
know
that.
We have birth certificates. We know where people are living. People have social security numbers. Why can't we find out whether or not people are doing really bad?
Well,
why can't we find out whether or not people are losing their minds?
Well, it's hard when they're in Yemen.
No, I mean, even in America, we can't find out.
Yeah.
I think we do not have an accurate account of our citizens, yet we could pretend that we're some sort of a community.
Yeah.
But we don't have an accurate account of the health of our citizens.
When SAG told me they weren't going to cover my mental health anymore because of some type of Obamacare that went into action, they said, you can't carry everybody, you can't carry them all, so only Plan 1 gets it, Plan 2 gets none.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I hope another Jared Loughner goes into your building and shoots every
one of
you.
Did you say that?
Yeah.
Did you say that?
Yeah. What, are they going to pull every right after that? They're going to pull everyone's mental health insurance?
Yeah, because that crazy guy lost his health.
Well, that's what you're turning us all. One of us is going to do that.
But let me ask you something. Do you think that when a person implodes like that, like if we're talking about what happened to that person on like a human scale, we might say, okay, well, maybe, you know, years of disaffection and radicalization and propaganda and mediation from the wrong influences and his focused attention on the wrong place.
It could
until
be
just
mental
his whole
health
personality.
As well. Yeah. Could but be you, a real but, issue, yeah, medical issue.
Right. But let's so let's zoom out for a little bit and think of that person as a cell in the bigger organism. Is he like a cancer cell? Is he the equivalent of like when a cancer cell starts to like replicate without concern for the rest of the cells in the system? I mean, is
that's
that what it
is?
Is it a broken thing?
Yeah.
Could it be fixed? Like, just like we want to make advances in medicine to detect cancer cells before they, you know, metastasize. Can we find human beings before they metastasize into
that?
Yeah. I think it's not an either or. I think sometimes yes, sometimes no. Right. I think sometimes it's probably a medical issue. And
yeah. What about research in terms of being able to find it? To, to find the genetic markers that predispose you to that.
And then there's a lot
isn't
of controversy.
Culture, we got to watch these people.
Yeah. But isn't culture ultimately the technology that does that? Isn't culture, like when we call TV, we call it programming. It programs you. It teaches you about right and wrong and what's legal and what's not legal. And if you're part of the pop culture, you know, you're programmed into a kind of mainstream consensus trance that basically says we're moderately free as long as you don't physically hurt me and I don't physically hurt you and, you know, you don't do certain things. But, you know, we have these kind of frameworks to impose some kind of an order so that the system can have some kind of function. So it just makes you wonder, you know, like especially with the privacy things, you know, are they really like spying on me or is it more like I'm a billion lines of code mixed with a billion other lines of code and just a bunch of algorithms?
Well, here's what's
and then they just detect when there's like weird behavior associated with violence that they would zoom in
or on they will use it. They will use anything you've done wrong as an excuse to go and really go after you.
They don't have the manpower for that.
No, but if they already want to fuck with you, they can look at your stuff and say, oh, he owns too large a lobster, which is a federal offense.
Ari, let me ask you.
Whether or not you bought it from anyone, then they can use
that
to say he's broken the law.
Why would they want to fuck with you when there's people that want to blow themselves up in subways? Don't you think that that's going to occupy most
of their
attention?
Let's say this. Why? This is why. Because some guy who works there, you fucked his ex-girlfriend.
Oh, snap, son.
God damn.
Shit just got real.
You know what I mean?
So a human
And then you're giving that guy the power to abuse it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I don't like. And I think that I don't.
And that's what this guy's saying is absolutely possible.
Here's
this
my question.
Saying that the people that work at the organization, like him,
right.
and they keep referring to him as a high school dropout, which is hilarious. Like,
he was your coder?
Didn't you
he was your guy.
Hire him?
Yeah.
Like, are you pretending you don't know this guy?
By the way, when has it ever worked? This is the question we have to ask. You know that saying, if we don't understand history, we're doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
Let's look in the past. At what point has a government gained full access to the information flow of its citizenry where it hasn't gone wrong? Show me where. What nation has it been where it's like, oh yes, that was that one government that knew that studied all the correspondence of all its citizens and it didn't go wrong at all. It didn't tighten down.
Yeah.
Didn't become a security state. Yeah. It was a utopia. No,
right.
No, it doesn't exist.
It's always bad.
It's
North Korea.
Yes.
Okay, but here's the counter argument to that. Do you think that if given the proper instruments, the citizenry could police themselves? Could we have
nowadays,
a society that becomes like Airbnb, where everybody can rent their own place and everybody else judges everybody else? And
you don't need someone now
else.
To tell you about a good dentist. You can just look online and you're connected to all the citizens.
And they all vet each
who
other.
Have told you by 4.5 stars.
Right. I was asking my brother, I was like, how do you know somebody from Airbnb is not going to be some serial killer who's going to cut me into pieces? He's like, well, because you can look at the 50 other people that stayed at his house and they rate his cleanliness and they rate his. So you can go anywhere in the world and have this.
Same way hookers work now at Eros.com.
Networks that regulate each other.
Yeah.
Self-regulating networks. So it's almost like we are connecting to each other, and it's like a homeostasis is being formed where the system is self-regulating.
We made the government in a time where we didn't have that ability.
Right.
And now we do.
Right. So
and
the
I
government is
to
becoming
things.
Obsolete. Right. So it's
the
not,
government's an appendix.
It's not utopia, but these decentralized peer networks that self-regulate each other with no top-down management, but just lateral, is leaning towards a kind of like space in which we can
live.
Yeah. We have Congress because we didn't have the ability to send
represent
someone
ourselves.
From California. We can't speak in Washington. So we need to send some guy as our congressman to speak for
We're
us.
Outdated.
But now we can speak for ourselves.
Yeah. Right.
We don't
it's
need
so
that.
Outdated.
A lot
all
of people doing
democracy
2.0. I mean, we need literally like if iOS doesn't get an upgrade for our iPhone every 6 months, we freak out. Like we need to upgrade literally the way the whole governmental system works to use these new technologies.
But Jason,
it should be online. It's really simple. The idea that anybody controls it is ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
It should be online, and there should be some sort of anonymous type group that controls the code to make sure that nobody can fuck with it.
Like Bitcoin,
you know, or
someone
who's on top of shit, or
maybe
and,
the
AIs.
Develop like a global ethic amongst the hackers.
Anonymous is us.
By the way, yeah. no one's giving. There. Here's the thing.
But here,
no one's giving this power up.
Exactly.
This is where I think that
they're just
this
taking
is where
it.
I think this fervent exactly. form of naive futurist comes into being. Where and not just futurists, spiritualists, and a lot of other people think, oh, you know, these as you're saying, these what do you call it, peerless networks?
Yeah, these decentralized peer networks.
And by the way, when I say you, I mean me too, because I do have this hope that somehow this thing is just like an escalation towards bliss, and it's all going to work itself out. And I do think that. Yeah. But again, if you look back at history, you will see that even if a thing has become archaic and antiquated, it doesn't mean that the people running that thing are going to give it up.
No, they don't want to give it up. They're
not
going
to. The only way they give it up is through violence.
Bam!
And this is
that's our inevitability here. Yeah. We're in for a revolution here in our lifetime.
Kurzweil says that that's actually not the case, and he says that, you know, like, the radio industry didn't want like TV to become a thing, and it didn't need to be violence for TV to like become.
No,
the
we're not talking
thing.
About.
And there didn't need to be. But they didn't need to be a goddamn revolution.
No, I'm ready to cheer it on.
No, but
I'm a coward. I'm not going to get involved. But I'm ready to say, here's some water, you guys. Yeah. Go out there and fight for us.
But I think that these technologies will meet resistance from the establishment. But I don't think that it requires violence for transformation to occur. I mean, we're seeing it through social media and the old media.
What are you talking about?
Some pussy
Syria,
talk,
Liberia, fucking the other one.
I think you mean Libya.
Gaddafi. Yeah, that's
Liberia
the one.
Is
yeah.
Africa.
It always gets overthrown. They don't give up. They don't give up. And they have the guns. So the only way to get them to give it up. Taking the guns.
Ways, oh, here's, you know, here's the
which other ways? When does it work?
Younger people who are growing up with
the die out
who have a different understanding
in
of the future.
It's like what you're in
I don't think that a representative government's impossible. I just think that we have to have more accountability. And the thing that gives more accountability than anything is the internet. It forces accountability. So I think that's. I think ultimately
you can't record
it's
cops
an age
anymore.
Thing.
You can't record.
You can
them?
Though. You can. Yes, you can.
They can arrest you?
No, they can't. No, I mean, individual places have passed laws trying to make that real, but there's a bunch of videos online that show people telling cops.
They told me today I couldn't take a picture of a TSA. I saw a baby being left on the counter, so it's funny, so I took a picture. Sir, you can't take a picture of the checkpoint. I'm like, that's wrong. What you're telling me is not true. I'm going to take more pictures.
I don't want there to be violence, man.
I don't think there needs to be.
I think the dream, the naive dream of the futurists is it's like you look in the animal kingdom. You look in not just the animal kingdom, but you look at any massive change that has ever happened is always surrounded by a release of energy. When things rapidly change, there's a release of energy, and energy releases are always violent. Bam! They're called explosions. So it's like
well,
in
it doesn't
this
have to be though. Just because
it can, be, it can be a psychic explosion. It can be a consciousness explosion.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't
I think
require, it doesn't require Hiroshima's.
I think
know,
we're
like,
experiencing that. It's just again like the psychedelic state of, you know, seeing the whole history unfold in a matter of a few seconds. I think this is slow, so we're not really understanding what's happening, but we're seeing all these.
Well, the psychedelics
these
are coming back.
We're seeing all these things. We're seeing all these paradigms crumble in front of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is because they're being exposed. They're being exposed by the internet. It's just happening to us too slowly.
Right.
Or it's happening, it's too confusing as to which direction it's going to go. There's too much peril in it.
It's the last few people that aren't just are like, hey, it's changing. Like, no.
How do the robots make
the
Ayatollah understand that it's not good to put women in beekeeper outfits? How did
you know, I completely concur with that. But I had an interesting experience. I was just in Berlin for a couple days, and I was hanging out at this, I went to this like steam room and spa over at the Soho House there.
Yes.
And it's co-ed. So beautiful naked girls are walking around and showering in front of you.
Whoa.
In Germany, and it's perfectly normal. And of course, I'm loving it, but I'm also slightly like, what's happening here? And then I think we're just as primitive here with separating the men's room and the female room compared to them. We're like the beekeeper suit. Do you know what I mean?
Indeed. I know what you're saying.
And I would think of myself as, no, we're liberal here in America and that. But look how shamelessly those women are just walking around naked.
It's like, relax. We're not fucking.
I totally agree.
Right.
I totally agree with you. I think that it's what you're seeing is a spectrum of men kind of controlling women. Like if a woman takes her shirt off at the beach, she gets arrested in the United States.
Crazy.
But I think that if I'm going to be on some part of that spectrum, I definitely want to be on the part of the spectrum where the definition of shirt is like a shoelace or something. I'd rather it be no shoelace at all.
Yeah.
But in that way, all I'm saying is I don't understand the solution to fundamentalists of any religion controlling massive populations, or in the case of North Korea, people controlling mass. I don't see how some android Jesus, I don't see how Kurzweil's manifestation of full brain emulation and the subsequent empathic connection that happens with people, I don't understand how that makes a person who's wielded control over a chunk of land using a false god, I don't understand how that's going to make them be like, you know what? I guess I was wrong.
Well, you can our society has been transformed by a change in consciousness. I mean, you could argue that the 60s fundamentally changed the way we think. I mean, this place used to be a lot more Puritan than it is now.
Iran used to be a lot more liberal.
Okay, so you have it. You have both things happening. You have cycles. You have things
becoming Iran.
Hear it's very liberal now amongst the people.
Yeah, the actual citizens are very secular, but the government is what's really
military.
There's a new guy who got in office, but there's always going to be the Ayatollah that's a supreme leader.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really a weird situation.
It's very strange.
And the guy who's the Ayatollah has been the Ayatollah since like 89 or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, something crazy like that.
Well, you know what, man? But let me just say this because I don't want to come off sounding like Ari, like I want some violent revolution.
I don't want one. I see it inevitable.
Have you ever had Steven Pinker on the show?
I don't think it's inevitable.
So Steven Pinker called Better Angels of Our Nature. He wrote a book called Better Angels of Our Nature. He has a TED talk called The Myth of Violence. And he actually went up there and explained that the chances of a man dying at the hands of another man today are the lowest than they've ever been in all of human history.
Wow.
Never. The world has actually never been less violent than it is today.
But look at Syria. 100,000 people.
It's a lot, but I guess what he's saying is that it used to be worse.
The Mongols killed a million in a day.
Right. I see what you're saying. Yes, it's that spectrum. It's a spectrum.
In a day?
Yeah, some insane number. I might be exaggerating. Well, there were battles like that in World War II. 72 hours they killed a million people with horses. Yeah. On horseback.
God. Awful.
No nuclear bomb, just swords.
They must be so tired after that.
You're chopping arms.
Oh, God. Just
that's
hacking.
That's when you got to run, when they're that tired. After they killed a million people. Yeah.
A million.
Yeah. That's we have to really sort of grasp.
God.
It's hard to, but we have to try to grasp. Just what a short period of time we haven't been barbarians.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Catholic Church... I mean, you go back to the 1500s, they were drinking, they had, like, mistresses, the popes had mistresses.
They even raped kids back then.
Yeah, they raped kids, they had armies. They had full armies. The Catholic Church had armies. The Vatican had an army behind it.
It's crazy.
I mean, you're talking about, like, really nutty shit. Like, they asked for the Pope's help once in fighting off the Mongols.
Really?
They didn't want to send any troops. They got lucky the fucking Mongols died off. Woo.
Here's the thing, man. I want to be pessimistic again because I keep thinking about this. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, in the same way that it used to be, if a person had a great idea and wanted to transmit it, he'd have to get a printing press and he'd have to, like, you know, to get the idea around, it took a long time. Mm-hmm. The idea would have to go by boats.
Yeah.
Right. So now it's like, if you want to build a nuclear bomb, like, it's really hard. Like, you've got to have centrifuges, plutonium. It's a fucking bitch. Like, you can't just do it if you want to build a nuke. But as 3D printers begin to become more and more advanced,
and they
start working at the atomic level, then in the same way that we have accessibility to instantaneous communication, people are going to have accessibility to instantaneous
3D print guns, or
creation of all weapons. Kinds of fucked up weapons.
Well, look, that's when we're going to need an account of all the people in our community. That's where we're going to need an account of them in a loving way.
No, but all it takes is one
person.
We have
society, like, looking out for each other.
Yeah.
The idea
all
is
it
that
takes
every
one guy
baby,
in his basement with a nuclear bomb.
You're right. But the idea is that every baby has the potential to become an awesome human being. Right? That's the idea.
Right.
Yeah. But some of them just get shit rolls of the dice. And they get wound up with two asshole meth head parents who fucking leave them in a basement one day for 24 hours and they starve to death.
Right.
You know, this shit like that happens to kids. You just get a shit roll of the dice. Or you can get an awesome roll of the dice.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's possible too. It's, I think it's our job collectively as a human species to concentrate on the least fortunate amongst us. I think it's the thing that everyone takes for granted, everyone ignores, and every single guy who runs for president doesn't bring it up. They never say, look, our society is only as strong as its weakest link.
Right.
And we got a bunch of people that are being ignored, and they're an awesome resource. If we educated them and helped them and moved them forward in some way, who knows what kind of great benefit you could get out of this community of people.
Well, it's true.
I just think of that guy on Locked Up Raw. That one, like, you know, like the guy, I can't remember which guy it is, like one of these, like the people that you see in Locked Up Raw or just like, you know, like I think, because, you know, I've thought, oh, I know the way to fix that is like you flood the prisons with LSD and like give these people house therapy.
It would help a little. It would definitely help a little.
You're eventually going to have a 12 monkey situation.
I think you can do a
somebody's
going to
have
therapy.
So much effect on the rest of the population with like a toxin or like a bunch of nuclear weapons that it'll just drastically change everything.
Well, you know what? I think society has always thought that this was coming or not. You know, it's like there's always people that believe that the apocalypse is around the corner, and there's always people that had faith. And like Jason said, this is the safest time to be alive ever, but yet we're still like, fuck, the sky's falling.
Yeah.
But
you know
what?
It's
almost like a part of being a human to recognize all the flaws around us to make it glaringly obvious that we're aware of them and to focus more attention on them and hopefully slow down the progress of the evil.
Us being scared and neurotic and almost like negative has been biologically selected for to warn us against potential consequences. Like, you know, the early caveman who was chilling out looking at the sky got eaten quickly.
Right.
The one that was like scared of impending doom survived. So there's no coincidence that we have evolved that. But until we start like playing with our own genomes, like we can't change our basic dispositions, which is to pay attention to whatever we think is dangerous. But I think it does have, you know, knowledge is power. When you appreciate, oh, really? The world has never been safer? That's interesting. Not to say there's not a lot of things to worry about. Yeah. It's not to say that there's not school shootings and 3D printing guns could be dangerous. But let's look at the actual facts as it is today.
Yeah, but all it would take. But in the beginning, if one guy out of 100 of them went a little nuts, he would punch some people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then as technology got better, he'd stab two people and then got stopped. And then as technology got better, he put off a bomb. Yes. And then as technology got better, he flew a plane into a building. And as technology gets better, you can affect millions and millions of millions of people all at once with just one one guy that falls in the cracks.
Well, this is
very much like the internet.
But
really.
It's funny, Ari, what you're saying goes against your hate of the surveillance state. Because you could see how in an accelerating technology where people can blow each other up with increasing increasing competency, you can see the necessity for perhaps you know, an observation of everything. It's a fucking, that's what I'm saying. It's a pickle, man.
Yeah, but I think that's going to happen anyway. You're never going to stay fully. You can't monitor everybody at all times.
But just because something's going to happen doesn't mean you don't try to stop it. I mean,
just delay it.
The trend seems irreversible. The trend towards everybody having access to everything at all times. I think we're going to have a real problem with money, because money right now is just, you know, it's used to be based on gold, and now we got this ones and zeros thing that we're rocking that doesn't really make any sense at all.
I think that Bitcoin's not going to last, but I think the thing that comes right after Bitcoin is going to be the one.
Oh, have you guys heard about this
shit? Bitcoin's going to be the friendster.
But I wonder, I mean, I think we live in a really strange time, because as access to information gets more and more transparent and more free, where we all have access to everything, well, then what exactly is financial resources?
It's going to become obsolete.
Where are those ones and zeros? Where do they go?
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm just saying, it's like there'll be a permeation point where transparency gets to a point where everyone has access to everything at all times. You're not going to be able to store any secrets. Yeah. So you're not going to be able to have money. You're not going to be able to put ones and zeros all in your bank account. It doesn't mean anything. Someone will take your ones and zeros.
But there also might not be a reason for anybody to hurt each other. Like, you know,
it doesn't have to be that way.
Right. McKenna says we're all going to move into universes of our own construction. But then, like, Kurzweil and Peter Diamandis just say, you know, technology is a resource liberating mechanism. The whole idea of scarcity is just contextual. You know, we fight over 1% of the fresh water in the world when this is a water planet. Desalinization revolution could give us all the water we could ever need. We fight over energy. We get 10,000 times more energy from the sun than what we would ever need.
Right.
With nanotechnology, matter becomes a programmable medium. We can turn anything into anything. So, I mean, when we have just like infinite abundance potentially, what would we fight about? There would be no incentive to fight.
Pussy.
done.
We could clone pussy.
Over, yeah. Son.
We could clone. Boom. We live in virtual reality.
You know what it's like?
Here,
diamonds. Girls don't want
saying.
Fake diamonds. They want real diamonds that came from coal. And the guys are going to want real pussy that you earn. Oh, she's a real person?
Well, we
damn,
can have it
dude,
in virtual reality.
Now,
we'll have virtual games where we can be the heroes in our own
the
universe.
The flaw in your argument, and the terrifying flaw in your argument, is the assumption that people do things for a reason. You're saying people do things because they don't have enough, or they do things because of this or that.
It's really
some of the most horrible things are done for no reason at all. They're done because the biocomputer that somebody's running clicked the wrong way, and they decided it'd be fun to hear the sound of a teenage boy's neck snap when they're painted like a clown.
So that's a cancer cell. That's a thing that's not doing. It's not moving towards complexity and organization in the sublime,
right.
Like the rest of the evolutionary process.
That's why there's the urge to kill it.
Right. There's the urge to kill it. But what the interesting thing, and I think this, I heard, I think McKenna said this, there's this relay, there's a race happening right now. There's a race happening. Because it's not as though these two things can't exist at the same time. It's like, we were talking about this, and I've been thinking about it a bunch since, how, you know, in phones, of course, they're conflict minerals. What's the name of that shit in phones?
Coltan.
What's it called?
Coltan.
So in phones, it's coltan. So we know that in our phones, in this device that's allowing us this greater connectivity, is the suffering of children in African
Congo.
Minds. So we see in nature that there is this intertwining of horror and of darkness and light.
Very interesting.
And to think that somehow technology is going to make things all light is to say that we will actually rewire the universe, when in fact it seems like what's happening is an acceleration on
both sides
of the scale.
Yeah.
And as that acceleration happens, there will be an equivalent amount of this orgasmic utopian Teilhard de Chardin omega point with the other side of the thing, which is the absolute obliteration of all humanity through nuclear weapons or bioweapons. Now, here's the hopeful thing is what Martin Luther King said, which is the universe bends in the direction of justice. And there is this hope that there's a refraction
it's
in this lens things are going towards the direction of creation instead of obliteration.
Well, Stephen Johnson says it's not utopia, but it's leaning that way. So, you know, you could argue that things are better. They're not perfect. They're better. Technology amplifies the good in us. It amplifies the bad in us. But maybe it amplifies the good a little bit more than it amplifies the bad, so that eventually it might subvert completely.
That's the hope.
The light might swallow the darkness.
That's the
entropy might transcend entropy completely. You know, we might become immortal gods living outside of time. You know, and maybe that's the singularity.
Yeah,
maybe,
this sounds a lot like the battle between hell and heaven.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it
almost
is.
Seems
that's
like
funny.
That, was,
it's
that
the
happened
same thing.
Before.
It's not
yeah.
a coincidence.
Yeah.
We need those archetypes to make sense of what's happening. We've used the same archetypes, religion, salvation, transcendence, the same things. The difference is that religion never produced what technology produced. Religion never let us fly through the air. Religion never gave us cell phones. It never gave us the internet. Technology does. So in our desire to believe that these things are going to help us transcend our limitations, you know, technology is actually delivering a little bit more than the previous stuff.
Oh, a
how
lot
dare
more.
You. Right. How dare you with your a little bit.
Well, there you go. A lot more.
Cyborg arms. And
trying to make friends. In the
kids are
community.
Hearing again.
They made Galileo apologize.
Yeah, they said you
wow.
dick. You were wrong.
The church.
Yeah, they were
what do
bitches.
You have to do with the...
You guys want to see a trippy video about us being cyborgs?
Okay. We're going to wrap this up with this trippy video because
I've
got to get out of here. I've
all
been
right,
working
cool.
all day.
Let's do it.
Howdy,
power to the people.
Happy Mushroom Fest to everyone who's participating.
Mushroom Fest, bitches.
God is love. Everything's going to be fine. Forget all that explosion shit.
Yes. And before we go, we would just like to thank Hover.com. Go to Hover.com/Rogan. Get 10% off of your domain name purchases and Stamps.com. If you click on the microphone, enter in the code word JRE, get yourself a special offer. Andonit.com. That's O-N-N-I-T. Use the code name Rogan. Save yourself 10% off any and all supplements. I've had a wacky few, actually like month and a half lately, ladies and gentlemen. And I wouldn't have been able to do all this stuff if I didn't enjoy the shit out of it. And it's a fascinating experience. So I want to thank all of you, and I want you guys to follow all my friends on Twitter, including Jason Silva. What is it?
At
Jason Silva.
Yeah.
At Jason Silva. At Ari Shafir.
Watch my storyteller show online on YouTube.
Yeah, there's a couple of them now. The first one was really good too. Where'd you film those?
Cheetahs.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like. It looked like some sort of a strip club type environment. It's perfect. Yeah. And T.J. Miller's one was really good too. That was that was really funny. And it's a really interesting sort of setup the way you have it. And I love that Comedy Central had the balls to put that online like that. Just produce it, make it like a real show, like a legit TV show. Put it online, and if it gets a good reaction, they'll probably wind up doing something like that on television.
But then all the comics, let all the comics like you do what you feel is bright.
Yeah. So go and check Diaz it out and support it. Joey Diaz is coming. Support it, folks, because Ari Shaffir is a bad motherfucker.
I'd like to do it on television for you guys,
too. Concept of sound.
So pass it around.
And he would like to get some of that sweet, sweet TV money.
Mostly, I really just want to put on a good show for people.
You do. You do.
I want to check it out, man.
Your intentions are 100% pure. You're a real legit comic, Ari Shaffir. It's an honor watching you grow from being a dude who was just sort of getting on stage the first time to being a legit headliner. It's awesome. It's cool to see.
Thanks, man.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Same to you, Duncan Trussell, you sexy bitch.
YouTube Comedy Central, this is not happening.
All right, you fucks. Follow Duncan Trussell on Twitter. Duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N. Trussell, T-R-U-S-S-E-L-L.
This is my podcast, Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
Double S, double L. That's Duncan Trussell.
Oh, awesome.
All right, you fucks.
If I may add, I would love everyone to check out Brain Games on National Geographic.
Yes.
So I have a new series. It airs
season
Monday
two,
nights
right?
at 9. We're doing season 2 now in the fall, but currently we're still airing it. Next Monday is the final episode, actually, the 12th episode. So please check out Brain Games on National Geographic. And I also launched a new YouTube channel called youtube.com/shotsofawe, where I'm releasing new videos of my crazy espresso psychedelic videos every week. So nice. youtube.com/shotsofawe.
If Red Band made that video, it would be shots of awe, just A-W, and it would just have kittens all day long.
Well, this one is shots of awe, A-W-E, but if you check it out, that new video is called We Are Already Cyborgs. That's the one I want you to check it out.
Powerful.
Leave with that.
Jason Silva. Do you have that thing queued up?
YouTube.com/shotsofawe, and then it's the first one down. It's called We Are Already Cyborgs.
How dare you?
We're already cyborgs. We can't get a goddamn YouTube video to play. You're fired!
Destroy the planet!
How dare you? All right, well, let's just recommend that people watch it.
Yeah, sure,
It's called it's Shots of Awe on YouTube, and We Are Already Cyborgs, which I concur, sir.
Awesome.
I concur. You're a bad motherfucker. Cosmic Dick Slinger.
Oh, yes.
The great Jason Silva.
Thanks for that. Thank you for having me.
Powerful Ari Shaffir, powerful Duncan Trussell, powerful Jamie. We're out of here, you dirty fucks. We'll see you next week with new shenanigans, and Ari Shaffir and I go to Alaska to conquer the Great White North.
Yeah.
Go fishing like a motherfucker.
Eat a reindeer dog.
All right, you fucks.
Awesome.
We'll see you soon. We love the shit out of you. All right. Big kiss.